some decision makers are in prioritize other meetings here in Parliament. When I inquired, they told me that our invitation came late, so they had already agreed to other meetings. Health is here, it's with the Select Committee, people are confusing. The Select Committee and the Standing Committee, I think honored members, we must try to find this distinction now, because people thought that they were coming to this meeting, yet they are attending a Select Committee meeting of appropriation, not a Standing Committee on appropriation. So, you know, that difference for people who are not here in Parliament, it's just almost, it sounds just like the same thing. You know, they come here, now the people I meet, people in the passages, well, they say that, no, we thought that we were coming to your meeting. I think that we should embark on that process of renaming, you know. And this one of ours is in the it's legislated, but I hope Comrade Wiki will try to embark on a renaming so that there shouldn't be a confusion, you know. Because to us, this meeting, of course, not saying that this meeting to us is very important. I'm not saying that other meetings are less important. Because we'd really like to take decisions on this meeting. And now, if the people are supposed to take decisions are not here, I'm not sure how we handle it. Unfortunately, we can't postpone. The minister has requested departments and supported by this committee to take austerity measures as far as spending is concerned. If we say, no, let's postpone because of other things now, it would mean that we're defeating our own objectives of ensuring that we save on cost. Having said that, I should spell out the objective of this meeting. The objective of this meeting is to table a report of the visit that we undertook to Eastern Cape, because of the grants that were terminated. The two grants that were terminated, one, that of electrification of schools, and the second one is the building of or extending sanitation to schools and clinics. But it's not just schools, the schools and clinics, and electrification is also for schools and clinics. When this grant was terminated in January, during the tabling of the budget, the committee had indicated that it was not unhappy with it was not happy with that, because the feeling was that there was still a need for this grant, but we couldn't agree. Treasurer had indicated to us that the grant was meant to end in 2009-2010, and to us as a committee, our view was that the grant is supposed to address the needs on the ground. Now, if those needs on the ground have not been addressed, how do we terminate the grant? We understood I think I must be very careful when I put this one, that we understood that when the grant was terminated, because I'm saying that's the part that we thought that either understanding, and the department must correct us, that the grant has served its purpose. And if the grant has served its purpose, it would mean to us that all the schools in South Africa are electrified, all the clinics are electrified, all the schools have sanitation, and all the clinics have sanitation. It is on that basis that we thought that let's go out ourselves and find if that is the situation. We chose the Eastern Cape. It was not chosen for any particular reason, but we said that as one of the rural areas that we could choose. We could have gone elsewhere, but we chose the Eastern Cape. Then that is a record that we intend tabling this morning. But before we present, I would like us just to make a quick introduction of who is here. Safe to say that honorable members, you know, this morning when I came here, I was really very fine. I mean, I was on top of myself, you know, excited about this meeting. But one of my findings this morning was that, for instance, Health Eastern Cape, who presented to us in the in Eastern Cape, is attending in this confusion of the standing committee and the select committee. They're attending the meeting of the select committee. And I know that I spoke to the HOD of the health. HOD is there, and the MEC, I think, is supposed to come. But when I left here, it was not there. DG of health, some of the people that are there. So that's really what changed my felt a little bit down, you know. If we could do it as a quick introduction so that we can understand who is here. My name is Mshieni Sokoni, Chairperson of Appropriation. Comrade Fatima Cohen, Chairperson of the Basic Education. Namchem, can I ask you to introduce yourself?
I'm Namchem Kulitin.
I'm a member of the Appropriations Committee. Well, yes, I'm a member of the Appropriations Committee. I'm
okay, thank you. Fishy and Kandana also on that side. I saw them there.
Department of Human Services in Victoria.
I
Vidal Bimabunda, member of the Appropriation Committee.
Now you omitted something. You should have said the whole speech. VW Mabunda. Well,
thank you, Chair.
No. What about you? The people behind us here.
Hi, I'm Tina Captain. I'm from Equal Education.
From Equal Education?
Yes.
Okay, we'll know more about Equal Education. Maybe the chairperson knows.
I think she does it quite well.
Okay. So. Okay. I don't know how it works. Now you've decided to retire. I wanted you to say something. I'm trying both sides.
No, you've got to actually plug it in before it will work. This is called basic education.
Okay, let me just allow my colleague to make some remarks as well.
Now, just a chairperson to say that we feel very privileged as Basic Education to have been invited. The unfortunate thing around programming, as you are aware, is that we are given certain slots in which we have to meet as committees, and we are also chasing down a deadline for reports to be submitted to this committee, and we're told that we're meant to do it by Friday the 22nd, which is, as you know, this Friday. So my committee, unfortunately, is busy processing the report as we speak, which is why you don't have many of the colleagues here. But I thought that given the importance of this meeting, one should be here. And so one feels very privileged to be here and hope that we're going to have fruitful engagement. And we did. And let me just thank you for your efforts at ensuring that there is cohesiveness between the Portfolio Committee and the Appropriation Committee. I do think that is enormously useful. We spend most of our time dealing with basic education issues. And you have a more overarching role. So it's quite important that we do complement each other, and I do want to thank you for those kinds of efforts. And thank you for inviting me.
Well, thank you very much, comrade. I think that as the chairperson of basic education has indicated that the committee is also busy compiling a report of the annual report. It means that she will not be here with us for the rest of the day. But there is a program in front of us. How are we going to go? Yeah, I think that the program is fine. Then saying we intend to finish.
Sorry?
We don't have a program. Shall we distribute the have we got copies of the program? Well, I'm sorry, there's no program. But Mr. Pleasure? How are you doing? Are you fine?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Comrade, you want to assist? I'm just afraid to switch this one off in case it doesn't.
We went through introductions, and as we say, we are concerned about what we saw in the Eastern Cape. And what made us call this meeting is the fact that we wanted real accountability from whoever is responsible and sits in those offices in the Eastern Cape and even in the Department of Basic Education, because when we live here, we would like to have a reflected thoroughly on why most of the things that we observed, like the nonsense standard, the fact that the sector offices were concerned about the lack of response right from we knew that they call it Bisho. And as a result, we expected to understand who's representing the Bisho offices, the capacity of those people, because when we live here, we'll want to know about the service delivery in those places. And during the introduction, I wonder if the accountability level or accountability was delegated to whoever is sitting here, so that when we leave this place, you know that someone is going to be accountable about what we are going to present, because I don't want to present. I'm just concerned about the level of accountability from both national and provincial departments of education.
I think that the issue that you're raising is a critical one, and I hope that because of the reasons that we situation that we're finding ourselves. Is that in terms of the public finance public finance management act, there's one person who is accountable in the department, and that person is the teacher of the department. Now the issue that I find this morning is that, for instance, with health, I'm not sure with basic education whether the chairperson is here, whether they are having another meeting here in Parliament. But what I do know is that health, the teacher of health, is here. I saw her this morning. HOD for health in Eastern Cape, I saw her. I don't know with energy, but I saw energy last night. They were here. I don't know if they are still continuing with their meeting. But I think that the issue that is being said is that the nature of our meetings is we don't want a talk shop. I think that's what the member was saying, that we don't want a talk shop where we talk and come back next time and talk, but we want really to take decisions so that tomorrow when we come back, we're able to say on the meeting that took place on the 20th of October, we resolved on this matter, and therefore there will be implementation of those resolutions. I see then some hands from energy, for instance. You want to respond to that. In other words, the issue is that you hear, have you got the necessary delegation to attend this meeting? So I think that's a question that is being asked. Okay, over to you.
I think from Department of Energy, our apology was submitted through your secretary that our DG will join us a bit late, because he's attending another meeting now.
Okay. The PG will join late, attending another meeting. I don't know what that means. We accept the apology, but I don't know what that means. we accept the apology. You requested to present around 11.
Yeah, maybe by then you would join us.
Education? Okay, human settlement. Okay.
I don't think the teacher is coming. He has sent another teacher to Mr. Matisse. I think he's still finding his way to the meeting.
To this meeting?
Yes.
Okay. Colleague Mom?
Thank you, Chair. My proposal is, yes, everybody is here, but I really would propose that we start with education, Eastern Cape, because it's the first one. Let the other people join us on the wayside. Maybe if we can find out from education if there is somebody who is playing the role of DG or delegated by the DG. Thanks.
In fact, I think that I understand what we're saying, but maybe what we really need to do in our invitation ourselves up front is to say, in the event that the DG is not there, there should be a proper delegation of that authority. Now, if we have not said that, it's difficult now to say that, it will be difficult not to continue with the meeting. But from the introduction, I didn't get that there was someone from the Department of Education, Eastern Cape. I did not get that. No? You're from National, both of you. Yeah. Now, I think that it's not that the issue is about the provincial department, because the issue in my introduction, I indicated that what really prompted this comic was the termination of the grant to all the, what you call, to the basic education, not necessarily for Eastern Cape or what, because we went to Eastern Cape, but we think that the report that we tabled on behalf of Eastern Cape, it's a report, it covers all the provinces. Now, the Department of National Education is here, and the Department of Energy is there. National Treasury is also there. And I think that, we're lucky, Provincial Treasury of Eastern Cape as well is there. But those decisions, I suppose that they are done at min-mec level to say this is what is going to happen now. So we'll not be what to call it. Let's not worry that Eastern Cape as a province is not there. The important thing, I think, for this is that the National Department of Education is here. So we're lucky. With the human settlement. So I think that then, let us continue. National Treasury, you heard what you call it, the concern, but I think that the decision that we take, we have in the past worked together, decisions have been what you call a convey. I would not like us to go through the report. I just hope that the report has been distributed. I wish that if it has not been distributed, I would wish that it be, copies be made for every delegation so that if not every person here, so that everyone could have the report. I did indicate in my introduction that we picked on the Eastern Cape because we understand the backlogs of provinces like Eastern Cape and others. And that without going through the report, is, I think my colleague had started, colleague Mashiko, to say what we found in the Eastern Cape was really more than what we had expected for. We had the Department of Provincial Department of Education and Provincial Department of Health, Provincial Department of Human Settlement. I'm not sure if National Human Settlement was not there. You were there?
I was there.
Yes, oh, I'm sorry. National, what they call it, Department of Human Settlement was there. They did present to us of the situation on the Eastern Cape, but more than that, we visited schools, we visited the clinics. The situation, Chairperson, there is bad, you know, maybe it's more than what we bargained for. Because other than the electricity not being extended to clinics or to schools, the structures are marked structures as well, which really make things very difficult. But to us as Parliament, we think that we can't, if the grant or the grants are terminated, it means that we're depriving those kids who come from the rural area to have access to a whole range of services. If, for instance, you're talking electricity, it means that those kids from those sites would never have access to not only to electricity, but to services like computers and what. So we are, as this Parliament, Democratic Parliament, continue to perpetuate a situation where the rural provinces or rural children or people will always be behind the urban, so-called urban, what you call a situation. So it's really our concern as this committee that we can't allow this situation to continue. We cannot allow ourselves to be party to the perpetuation of this situation. And therefore, we do not understand why should this grant not be reinstated so that we can ensure that all the schools, all the clinics, for instance, Dr. Fletcher went to clinics there. Né? The clinics that we saw, members will tell you, the clinics there, one, they operate not only just as ordinary clinics that treat vaccinations and what. They also operate as hospitals because the hospitals are far. In other words, they take responsibility of delivery of labor, for instance, and those kind of things. And there, the clinics use solar. They use the solar. And we were told that the solar is only enough to put on the light. You can't put on the fridge. You can't put on everything else that a person in labor would need, because the solar does not have the capacity to deal with that. That is one. Number two, those solar panels that are there have not been serviced, and some of them have not been serviced for years. And everybody agreed that those solar have not been serviced. And now we, as national departments, decide that now we no longer need this, what you call there's no longer a need to extend to electrify those clinics and the and schools. In fact, that's the second thing. But the third thing is that the clinics or schools, and it's a national thing, it's not only about those clinics and those schools there, but nationally, the schools are not, there's no special dispensation in terms of charging for the schools and the clinics. Thank you for coming. I hope that there will be space to accommodate you. But we must, can we reduce the ESCOM delegation so that if we could just get two people from ESCOM who are not going to present to come this side and just accommodate this delegation from National Treasury? I'll organize. Thank you very much. We'll organize some space for you there. Can you join here? There's another space. I think there's another chair. No, fine. Thank you. No, it's fine. So, Chairperson, we're saying that this is the kind of situation that we found in the in those areas. So it means that we'll continue. In fact, the finding of the Gini coefficients in South Africa says the differences, I mean the disparities between the poor and the rich is actually widening. It's not closing. It is precisely because of these services that we're trying to provide or not to provide for the rural people. So the issue really is, do we want to allow ourselves to find ourselves in this situation? Because I believe, we were told that the perception was that for all the schools that will be built after, was it 2007 or so, and clinics, they would be electrified and have sanitation, but the reality is not there. We go to a secondary school of about of over 1,000 people. There are 5 toilets that are there. Well, we do accept that not South Africa is a dry country. Obviously, we're not expecting all the communities in South Africa will have the running water, but just basic access to sanitation. You know, a high school. There are 5 what they call the toilets. I can't remember the number, but I think that the number is contained in the report. But they've got 5 toilets, and all of them share those toilets and what. And that is the situation that we found ourselves. But before maybe we allow departments to present, I don't know if colleagues would want to add on what I've said. Chairperson, you want to add?
The issue of, and I just speak on behalf of schools, not clinics as such, but
yes.
I think that there is and has been a priority of government to look at, for instance, you would remember about a year ago, or 2 years ago actually, the former president in his address to parliament spoke about the eradication of pit latrines and mud schools and schools under trees. And for that purpose, there has been a consistent allocation for infrastructure at the level of schools. To my mind, Chairperson, and the one thing you have to understand, particularly I think it applies both to health as well as education, is that we operate under what is called the concurrent powers. Under the Constitution. And clearly what that means is that there's a delineation between what national departments do and what the various provinces do.
Mm-hmm.
In this last analysis of the annual report, and the CFO is here, so she will correct me if I'm wrong, but there was an amount, I think, of 55 billion that was allocated in terms of the infrastructure for schools. two provinces. Is that the correct amount or not? And what was the amount that was allocated?
For my schools, we had a 2.7 billion addition to the deadline, starting from the 2008.
We'll talk about that.
Okay.
We'll also talk about
that. I think what I'm talking about is the global figure that was transferred to provinces, meaning all nine provinces. But having said all of that, I think what we're sitting with is a sense, and I can't say that this has been verified through empirical data, but the sense that we get is that we don't know to what extent provinces are actually capacitated to use that money to effectively deal with infrastructure backlog. In those provinces, and you have disparities between provinces.
Mm.
Gauteng, for example, says that its maintenance backlogs alone would exceed the portion of the money that they get for infrastructure development. So it's not even a question of building new schools, it's a question of just dealing with maintenance of existing schools. So I think what is needed, firstly, is a national audit on what our infrastructure backlogs are per province. And when we say infrastructure backlogs, I think we need to categorize them. We need to categorize maintenance issues. We need to categorize your primary functioning units. In other words, what is it that constitutes a school? It would have to have a classroom with a roof, with electricity, with sanitation, whether that's waterborne sanitation or not. I think that's your basic infrastructure. Now, what the department is working on is what they call a blueprint for what would constitute this idea of a school, because you could have a school under a tree and that would still be a school. And so they've done that. In addition, it looks to me as if we've placed this issue of infrastructure backlog, and particularly the eradication of schools that are mud schools and schools under trees, under the microscope already a year ago. Minister of Basic Education had come to the portfolio committee. We went to the minister's office. See, we had a meeting in Pretoria at the time. And there are some discussions happening between, I believe, the Department of Basic Education, and I may be mistaken, I'm not sure Treasury is involved in it, but I do know that the planning unit in the Presidency is also involved in it, where they are looking at what they call the Accelerated Infrastructure Grant, which is meant, Chairperson, to look at this backlog holistically and utilize and free up the capacity that we had drawn from during the World Cup with the stadia, and bring to bear some of those resources, the kinds of resources that we freed up at very short notice to build the stadia. We hope to bring that kind of infrastructure capabilities to the schools. In addition to which, I had a discussion very recently, less than a week ago, with the Premier of the Eastern Cape. And she said to me that they have put together a model which Treasury was putting to, I think it was the World Bank. What was it? DBSA. But I'm told that it's also being presented to the World Bank. In terms of a model to look at the backlogs, and I mean, they're not even looking at loans at this stage. They're looking at once-off grants and trying to leverage what goodwill there is internationally in regards to education, the momentum created by the focus on education, in particular during the World Cup, has I think, leveraged a whole lot of interest. Internationally especially, to deal with education and education-related issues. So So it seems to me that there is this effort that's being made to deal with this in an extraordinary way, as opposed to, you know, the kind of budgets that we get that sometimes can just be dealing with maintenance and so on, and then not dealing with these backlogs. But that is not to say that these concerns that you are raising are taken care of in those proposals. So, for instance, if you already have a school and that school has got no water, no electricity, that's not a situation I think that's going to be cured through special investment and so on. That's about management. That's about you know, using the funds in the most appropriate way. So my sense is that this is a very worthwhile exercise, and I think that we need to get to the bottom of how do we get to that point that prioritizes issues, by the way, that affect the core delivery of those services. I mean, you can't imagine that a lack of water and sanitation doesn't affect education. It certainly does. You can't imagine that a lack of electricity doesn't affect health services. Of course it does. And so I think the minute we start thinking along those lines, people start realizing, oh, by the way, you know, it is important for them to have proper toilets in a school. Otherwise, you get diseases. Kids stay at home, teachers stay at home, and there's no learning and teaching. So I think that kind of mindset needs to be created so that we see these things as vital to the delivery of those priorities in government. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Minister. Can we have then the presentation, National Department of Education?
After the bill with education, I think I'm going to have to. I'm chairing. Obit is not here, but they expect me to chair that small thing.
Thank you very much.
Chairperson, thank you very much, and to members of the committee, and good morning to all colleagues. As I've introduced myself, my name is Soli Mafoko. I'm responsible for physical resources planning in the Department of Basic Education. The brief that we got in terms of this presentation was to enlighten the committee on processes that we have engaged in and plans in terms of dealing with the challenges relating to water sanitation and electricity. But over and above that, we, in the course of the presentation, we are not only going to concentrate on those issues of basic services, but to highlight the overall approach that we have adopted as the Department of Basic Education in terms of dealing with challenges relating to infrastructure as a whole. And Chairperson correctly indicated that whilst this meeting is a sequel to the visit in the Eastern Cape, our approach in terms of this report back is to look at the how we are approaching this challenge, these challenges nationally, not only with respect to the province of the Eastern Cape. I think the introduction basically refers to the water and sanitation program, and this information is what we presented in our first meeting in the Eastern Cape relating to the grant that the Chairperson indicated earlier on and what was achieved starting from the 2007 financial year out to the 2010 financial year when the grant came to an end. And that's just some of the pictures just to show what has been achieved. Just to jump over to the challenges, but to first of all mention that since the inception of the program in 2007, 1,022 water projects and 1,077 sanitation projects have been completed
nationwide. But the program was unable to achieve what was intended at the beginning because of spiraling costs and general escalation of materials costs within the built environment. And we all agreed that there is a need for additional funding in order to deal with this. As I indicated in my introduction then, these are some of the issues that prompted the Department of Basic Education to come up with a way or an approach that would seek to deal with all these challenges. Now, colleagues would be and members of the committee would be aware that as the Department of Basic Education has developed what we call Schooling 2025, which intention is to chart the way forward in terms of education in all aspects, not only in infrastructure. And a subset of Schooling 2025 is what we refer to as ACD, and the Chairperson of Basic Education Committee has alluded to that. Now, the ACD, which refers to the Accelerated School Infrastructure Delivery Initiative, is a subset of Schooling 2025. And in terms of Schooling 2025 and ACD in particular, and this was adopted at the Council of Education Ministers, that the plan is that by 2014, the emphasis would be to provide schools with water, sanitation, electricity, and fencing, and to deal with all schools that are constructed from inappropriate material and are a danger to learners and educators, and to deal with overcrowded schools. And in addition to that, provide your critical learning and teaching spaces in those identified schools. When we talk about your critical teaching spaces, we are referring to your libraries, your laboratories, your nutrition centers, and so on. And this phase would be delivered in an accelerated mode. Then from there, we go to the 2015-2020 strategic planning period, which would be to expand the provision of these critical teaching and learning spaces. And by the 2025, by the end of the 2025 strategic planning period, it is envisaged that in terms of this approach, all schools and the teaching and learning environment would be at the level in terms of our norms and standards. Now, just to go back to the basis for this particular approach, members would be aware that we have to develop the norms and standards for school infrastructure. The norms and standards for school infrastructure clearly indicate, as the chairperson indicated earlier, on what constitutes a school. And the norms and standards clearly delineates in terms of what we call basic functionality, minimum functionality, and optimum functionality. And these three periods that we have delineated are based on that particular gradation in terms of the norms and standards. To say, by 2014, all schools should have reached what we call basic functionality. And basic functionality means that all schools should have water, should have sanitation, should have electricity, should all inappropriate structures should have been dealt with. Now, going forward, then you go into minimum functionality and optimum functionality. And when we talk about optimum functionality in terms of the norms and standards, we are referring to schools should be having all the spaces that are needed, your libraries, your sporting facilities, and so on. And the target, as I've indicated, is that by 2025, all schools would be having those kinds of spaces. So we went on to cost. How much is going to be needed to provide these facilities? Now, this actually shows the number of schools that are constructed of mud, and those are what you refer to as entire mud school. That is, in some instances, you'd have a school that is constructed of brick and mortar, but you'd have a classroom there or a storeroom that is constructed of mud. We have not come counted those kinds of schools. We are referring to a school where the whole school is a mud structure, and you'd realize that the majority of those schools are in the Eastern Cape. 395 of those schools are in the Eastern Cape, and 7 are in the Eastern, in KZN. Now, how we came to this figure, let me go back to the 2.7 billion that we referred to earlier on that was added into the baseline of provinces from the year 2008. Now, provinces, the majority of provinces have made some progress in terms of dealing with mud structures. However, the majority of mud schools were in these two provinces. And it is indicative of the fact that perhaps to start that, to indicate that, for instance, in the Eastern Cape only, as we speak, there are about 157 projects that are currently going at different levels of construction, specifically referring to mud schools. And in the KZN, currently, there are about 54 projects that are currently going on. So those schools are not counted in these figures that I'm presenting here. So these are schools that, over and above what has been allocated to these provinces, the province would not have enough funding to deal with these schools. So you'd realize that the majority of our backlog is situated in the Eastern Cape in terms of mud schools. And our analysis in terms of the cost model that we are using is that we would need about 4 billion to deal with those mud structures. Now, over and above that, you have mud structures, but you have other structures that are, for instance, are built out of wood, metal, zinc, and so on. And in the Western Cape, you have what they call planky school, and so on. Now, when adding those, the number of schools that we are talking about goes to 476, and an amount of 6 billion would be needed to deal with those schools. Now, Chairperson, let me add also to say that in the costing, we have factored in, as you provide, as you go into a particular school, say for example it is a mud school, as you go into that school, you would be raising down the mud structure and providing that particular community with a brand new school. Depending on the number of classrooms that would be needed, you'd be providing that school with water, sanitation, electricity, and all the spaces that are needed. So in this particular instance, the cost might seem a little bit high per school, but it is because we don't go into a school only, the intention is that you don't only go into a school to provide it with water and sanitation, but you'd be providing a school with all the spaces that are needed. If for instance, you go into a school that needs 5 classrooms or 10 classrooms, you'll be providing a school with 10 classrooms, an administration block, laboratories, libraries, and all the spaces that constitute what is a school in terms of the norms and standards. Okay. Now, over and above that, we do have schools that, in terms of the norms and standards, would fall below basic functionality in terms of, for instance, schools that do have sanitation but do not have enough, for instance, toilet seats per learner. You would have schools, for instance, that you'd have your ablution facilities that were not properly maintained and are at a level where they cannot be used by learners. You know, so you have those kinds of situations that we have costed as well, and to bring those schools up to basic functionality in terms of norms and standards would be needing an amount of 2.3 billion. Now, in this instance, you will only be bringing those schools to basic functionality, because in some instances you find that a school does have classrooms, a school does have a library, but the ablution facilities are not up to standard. As Chairperson has indicated, in some instances, we have a school with 1,000 learners, but with only 5 toilet seats. This is what we are talking about, to bring those schools up to a level where, for instance, in terms of the norms and standard, we are saying you would have one toilet seat per 20 learners in a school. So this is the costing that we used in terms of, and it amounts to about 2.3 billion. But over and above that, if we are to include, to take those schools that the previous slides and you take those schools up to optimum functionality. You not only provide them with water and sanitation and electricity, but you take them to optimum functionalities. Remember, when I talk about optimum functionality, we are referring to providing all the spaces that are needed. Our costing is that we are going to need about 40.4 billion rand to bring schools up to that level. Now, Chairperson, this is the bid that we have submitted to National Treasury to say this is the amount of money that we are going to need to bring our schools to a level in terms of the norms and standards that would enhance the quality of education. What have we done up to so far? The concept of ASIDI was developed. We have verified the data with all the provinces, and we have engaged with the provinces to confirm the figures that we are presenting, and the bid was submitted to the National Treasury. And we are in the process of depending on the availability of funding, establishing formal relation forums with national and provincial stakeholders. Remember, what we are advocating in this particular instance is that the implementation approach is not going, we are not going to follow the normal implementation approach. The approach that we are going to take is that this particular program would be run from the national level. The National Department of Basic Education would take control of this particular program, but with together with your provincial counterparts. So what we are talking about establishment of national and provincial fora is that you'd have a national steering committee that would be in charge of the whole program at national level, but then you would have committees or steering committees at each province that would be responsible for actual implementation of the program at that level. Obviously, would need to secure the required funding and the required capacity for the initiative, and as soon as that has been put in place, then the plan would be implemented in line with schooling 2025. So, Chairperson, in short, that is our vision as the National Department of Education. And remember that this program, as we propose it, would be run concurrently with what is happening in provinces. The allocation to provinces and what they have planned will continue, but this would be an additional program that would ensure that we fast-track the provision of these facilities to schools, as I've indicated, that at particular times we reach particular targets. By the end of 2014, we have reached a particular target. By the end of 2020, we have reached a particular target. And by 2025, our vision is that all our schools should be at an optimum level. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mr. Makuku. Any addition? You're fine. Okay, so there is no addition. And the Department of Health is not here. Would have loved them to present. However, good morning, Ms. Fano and Mr. Okay, National Treasurer. We're having a disadvantage when the health is not here. But let's hear from National Treasurer. Am I still here? Now, before you come in, where is this FSC? Wow. Okay. Now let's hear from you. From the presentation. Sorry. Yeah, from your presentation. so long. Welcome, Petichi. Are you the TTG? TTG. Now let's welcome the TTG Human Settlement. We were informed that we did get your apology. I think Cape Town is growing like Jehovah. People also get lost in Cape Town. But it's fine. You're here. Welcome. Let's hear FSP. By the way, in Eastern Cape, we also heard from the Public Service Commission. If you go through the report, you'll get all this presentation that we get in the Eastern Cape. But they are not here. Over to you.
Thanks, Jefferson. My name is Stebogo Makuge. I'm in the Fiscal Policy Unit of Financial and Fiscal Commission. Maybe just to take you through our observations of challenges facing infrastructure delivery in the Eastern Cape. We have interacted with the province, and obviously you'll see that there are different figures estimating the magnitude of the backlog, and there are various reasons why we have different estimates, because one, we might be using different costing models. Two is that the extent of the infrastructure maintenance backlog is not properly quantified, but we all know that figures might be costing billions of rands, and I mean, there have been attempts to intervene nationally. I know that National Treasury and the Department of Basic Education has intervened in the Eastern Cape through your infrastructure delivery improvement program. There have been challenges there. Funds for month structures, you know, there have been some discussions whether these funds were supposed to be transferred to the province via the equitable share or through the infrastructure grant to provinces and so forth. And generally, the provinces also use other delivery agents to deal with the challenge. So we have also evaluated the Department of Education infrastructure plan, which they are also saying that with the current funding, they will take years, you know, to either comply with the Department of Basic Education infrastructure space norms and standards, because your backlog can be due to various reasons. You might not be complying with norms and standards, you know, as specified by the department, and therefore, if maybe it says that a class is supposed to have 40 or 39 or whatever school children, and you're accommodating more than that, then that is a space backlog and so forth. We know that the Department of Education has put some money in developing the education infrastructure information system, where we are able to see the extent of the backlog. But with regard to health, that is still lacking in terms of the infrastructure information system. So at the national level, it's one of the challenges that we can't necessarily ascertain what is the extent. But I mean, the Eastern Cape Department of Health has indicated that they're projecting 1.7 billion deficit. And obviously, if we are faced with a deficit, you know that the first thing you sacrifice is on maintenance, which by itself then creates a backlog. So these are the numbers we got from, I mean, just confirming what Mr. Mabuke has presented, that around 60% almost of the backlogs, education backlogs in the country, are in the Eastern Cape. You know. So then something needs to be done. It's not only increasing funding allocation, but also around provincial priorities you know, because if then the province, for instance, decide to spend money on other provincial objectives like your rail, like your airport, sacrificing basic health and education, then because it's a public choice issue, you know, we are not saying it's wrong, but it's something that we need to also discuss in arriving at our public choices. But yes, this is an issue that we are is concerning us. But then our view generally on conditional grants is that we have made a recommendation that especially infrastructure grants or infrastructure related conditional grants, because infrastructure is tangible, so you can see it delivered. We are saying that, you know, those grants should have targets that are verifiable. You know, so your expenditure should be related to your target, such that we should be able to make an assessment of your deliverables and your targets before a grant is taken out of the system or folded into the equitable share. That is the recommendation that we have made, and we are concerned that these grants, your water, your sanitation and electrification of clinics and schools, have been taken out of the system, whereas the national department is presenting a view that is having an ACD program, this accelerated, which they also want to go and borrow, you know, through our development institutions for this backlog eradication. But we see from a public finance point of view that government has decided to stop the grants. So what is the economic cost of doing that? Because, I mean, there is a cost of borrowing for infrastructure development. So we need to do a cost and benefit analysis whether to finance this from a public finance or borrowing. But what remains the fact is that we have backlogs that must be resolved. And also, just to continue, we have said in the past that, I mean, infrastructure, we know that because it costs billions, we cannot resolve the issue once off. It's a progressive realization of something that it will take years to do. But it must, government must show a concerted effort in doing so, because some of the challenges are constitutionally mandated services. So your water, your sanitation, those are constitutionally mandated. So if you don't provide, you might be transgressing the constitutional provision. So it's something that we need to balance as well. And in our 2010 annual submission on the division of revenue, we did say that given the recession that was imminent in the country, that it will make economic sense then to target labor-intensive infrastructure projects, you know, for economic reasons and social reasons as well. And we have identified water, sanitation, and electricity. But generally, we are saying that the challenge is not only finance related. It also has to do with delivery models. You know, even though these are concurrent functions, now the Department of Basic Education is proposing a new delivery model, which is also impacting on the constitutional mandate of provinces, whether do we now elevate this function to a national level in conjunction with provinces, or do we still continue giving the mandate to provinces to deliver. So it's something that we need to deal with, whether is it money, and then if you give money, what kind of a delivery model do you bring in. And we are saying that generally there are different grants in the system, all aimed at infrastructure delivery. You have your municipal infrastructure grant, you have your infrastructure grant to provinces, or EPWP those are local government functions. So how does a municipality then relate to education and so forth? You know, because in certain instances, Department of Education cannot just come and impose, you know, the cost of constructing distribution networks to the school might be high. So how do we cost for a service, and who's going to get the cost from an intergovernmental point of view? So those are the things that we need to deal with. And we are saying that some of these grants complement each other, and there's a need to consolidate them into a broader human settlement grant to eradicate this backlog. Thanks.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Makube, for the precise presentation. I hope that members are noting on the presentation, because we will allow all the presentations. The pity that you focus on the Eastern Cape did not take the global vertical, because Eastern Cape was just an example of what the situation is globally. But you will find what to call at the time. Energy, you've given us your slide. Let's hear from you. Let's just do us a favor when you present. If you think that what you want to present has been presented, you can just cover those areas that you think that were not covered in the presentation, so that we don't only save money here, we only save time. You're welcome. I suppose everyone has got a copy, no? But before you present, are you going to present separately yourselves and ESCOM, or?
We do have our own presentation, and ESCOM.
You have the overall, ESCOM will go to detail. Okay.
Okay, thanks, Chair, for affording us opportunity to come and present our case. As you can see there in slide 3, that we have been mandated as a department to eradicate electrification backlog of households, schools, and clinics by 2014. And as there was an understanding between the Department of Health and basic education and energy, that the schools that are built after 2001, that will be a responsibility of the Department of Basic Education and Health to electrify those kind of schools. And as you go down there, we have eradication of clinics backlog was set for 2007-08, and that was done, Chair, but through with a grade and non-grade. But it doesn't mean that the we have stopped electrifying, because we have to convert the non-grid into grid. So as well as the school shed was supposed to be completed in 2009-10 financial year, we are still busy with them. You'll see other slides there that talks to that. And schools which were far from the grid networks and in mountainous areas were electrified using solar home systems. Chair, though you have gone to Eastern Cape, we also wanted to give you a bigger picture of what we had. Because when we started, we received a list of 3,664 schools from education, and we went on to look into the list and revise it. And amongst the revision, we found that some of the schools were closed, some were merged, some were electrified already on the bigger list. And I think there on my slide 5, I made a difference between the revised and what we planned for both financial year of 2008-09-10. So I think the following slide is talking to the difference, that difference, what is it that is made of. Looking
sorry, just do us a favor, because you know, that's a slide so-and-so is saying this, not just the following slide, so that we know that we are really keeping pace with you, you know.
Okay, thank you.
So.
Okay, I'm on slide 5, Chair. That there is a difference there on the last column, and I have gone down to page 6 to explain exactly what that difference means. Looking at the bigger picture, we have inappropriate structure. We're talking of mass structure, zinc, and all these other kinds of structures. To us, based on the information we had and what we revised, it was 167 that we have, and the farm schools, we have 241, and we have vandalized schools, which were 34, because it's only based on the information that we have received, because there could be more in Limpopo and all other provinces. But this was based on the information received from Department of Education. Okay, then I try to bring it down to district in terms of the Eastern Cape and all those entities. Can check it. That is Free State and Limpopo and Mpumalanga. There we go. So in terms of the conditional grant, nationally, the money that we have received for 2008-09-10, we have received a total of 238 million, and then we are now at 704, but that was as of an end of August 2010. And then we will be finishing this project of 805 schools by end of October. We are now in process of concluding everything and in terms of electrification of those. And the we will be concluding this project.
Okay.
Yeah, because there you can see we plan for 805 in terms of the total amount of 238. So we'll be concluding this by end of October. So we have a non-grid program that was running, as you can see there. I think when you look at the 2008 and 2009, we planned to do just over 200. I mean, we planned to do 450 schools. And we have just done under 200 because of the fact that they could not find schools that meet in the criteria for non-grade. That's why we could not go further than that. That is a typical installation of non-grade. We are offering the schools the TV set, video, and a dish. And then we, as you can see there, there are batteries and regulators and inverters for the school. And what is it that the school can do and not do? Looking at the school system power, we only provide 1 kilowatt. It's a 1 kilowatt system, which is enough for lighting of classrooms, and they can also use 2 admin computers, a TV and satellite for school. But there's also a limitation that we are unable to use thermal equipment like stove, kettles, and all those. And that is a limitation in terms of the system power. And in clinics, it's the same. We provide 2 kilowatt. We can only connect the admin computers for lighting, and we also electrify nurses' rooms, and vaccine refrigerator can also be part of the. It can also be accommodated into the system, and we are busy finalizing so that all those clinics that we have electrified through non-grid, that we install the solar water heater, because they are already there, and it's just that to take them to the clinics and also the vaccine refrigerator. So we just want to conclude that part. Also, there's limitation about the system, because you cannot cook with it. That's only the challenge we have. And looking at the whole cycle of the non-grade chair, you can see that the Department of Education, Department of Energy, we are installing the systems and we are also responsible for universal access of schools and clinics. And from there, as you can see, at school level, they just do because they were told to do the basic maintenance, like just cleaning and checking the voltage of the systems and so forth. And then from there, it's the Department of Health, National, to make sure that the high level maintenance plan is in place. So, which means they should have gone to other service providers to make sure that they contract to maintain all those non-grid systems. And then from there, as we move on, it goes to where there is a grid encroachment. It's also our responsibility as a department to make sure that those clinics which were electrified using non-grid are connected to grid. And then we also make sure that the system itself does not become a white elephant, because now we also include the change overseas when the electricity is in there, so that when they have problem in terms of the grid electricity, they can also switch to the non-grid part, because then we cannot remove it. That is basically the life cycle of this non-grid electrification. The experience that you've got from the vandalism, that's how it looked like, and this happened when we started with the project of non-grid. And what we put in place now was that we did social facilitation, because this social facilitation is where before you can even go and install the system, you engage the community where the system is going to be installed, and after the installation, you go back and show the principal and the school how this system works. And now there's also innovation installation whereby it's not easy now to remove this panel from the structure. There is that kind of innovative installations that are there. And also the security guard, the school is providing security guard for the systems as well. And it was expected that after the handover, the maintenance contract will be signed between the non-grid service provider and both DBE, Department of Basic Education, and Department of Health. We find that only in Eastern Cape, they managed to have that kind of contract, but it has now expired. What is happening in terms of the maintenance? The school will have a contact number of the service provider to report a fault on the system, and the service provider will log a fault and provide a reference number. Within 72 hours, a technician should be dispatched to the school and fix the fault. But now, we don't have that in place currently. And we had several meetings with the education and health regarding the maintenance and the cost associated with the maintenance, the cost that associated with the asset itself. And always you get these maintenance budget challenges from the department. So typical examples of what happens when we go and plan for the schools. You'll go to the schools that you find that the school is merged, the school is relocated, is closed down, school is abandoned, and at some point you have to get a waylift. A problem to go past the forestry and so forth. So, and after gathering all this information, you have to replan again. You have to go back and replan, and it takes a lot of time to do that. But in conclusion, Chair, what you can say, you say all the known electrification backlog are planned and will be electrified before the end of the year. Those that we know. All the non-grid schools and clinics will be electrified with grid electricity as and when the grid encroaches to those areas where they exist. Electrification of mass structure.
Sorry, you're using big English now, and I'm sure my professor here next to me.
The grid encroachment.
Sorry?
About
the great encroachment, what do you mean by that?
No, the great encroachment is that where there is a solar home, remember that the solar home system is in deep rural area where there's no network.
Yeah.
So when that network goes to that area, they call it encroachment.
Okay,
so,
when it encroaches
so
on the other one. Yeah? Okay.
Then that's basically what you mean there. And
my
then
the gender assisted me, fine.
then the electrification of mass structure schools will be incorporated into the strategy of the eradication of mass structure by the DBE, Department of Basic Education. They already tabled it. So after that has been completed, we can be able to say how much that costs in terms of electricity and so forth and so forth. And we are committed to working with the education and health to finalize everything that might be out there that we don't know. Thank you, Chair.
Well, thank you for the presentation. Though you're not saying, what we are expecting is that this year, 2010, to be coming with very clear what we call a plan, so that we can really make you account on things, on targets that you have given us. It's not clear, it's just given us general, this is what you intend doing, blah, blah, blah. So that also the when basic education, you know, find that the schools are not electrified, it will be because we should be able to excuse you on those that won't be able to do 2010, 2011, or 2025, you know. I'm saying the plan is not very clear. But let's see ESCOM. You are accompanied by ESCOM. Now it's good now that who is presenting? I nearly said something, but it's correct that I didn't say it because I thought you were not going to present. But just do us a favor, no? What energy has presented, I'm sure you will not what to call it. I repeat that, but now the teacher is here, she wants to present herself. welcome, teacher. So, what do we do? I took caution.
Yeah.
Did you got a space there?
Oh, the DJ will take this one.
Okay, yeah. Okay. I'm going to see a bit in back of me.
Yeah.
DJ, welcome. You know, when you were not here, things were running very smooth. Now, all of a sudden, you're scaring people now. It's difficult to install the presentation. Eh?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I have no intention of disrupting anything. Whoever was presenting, with your permission, Chair, if they can proceed.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, did you? Okay, continue.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Mm-hmm.
for instance, you find the program besides the schools that are funded by the Department of Energy, the Department of Education and the Department of Health in various provinces, they do make funding available to help schools and society as well. Then the database of all schools and clinics is provided to us by the Department of Energy. And in respect of the accelerated program,
That is being done in respect of schools that are within a 3-kilometer radius. Hence, the department was talking about then now schools that are non-grid electrified beyond that point. And some schools then are electrified as part of the household electrification. Chair, the next slide will deal with the history of schools connections since 1991 up to 2010, that is much. You will see as a province we've connected about 11,617 schools, and you will note as well that most of those schools, 11,250, those are in rural areas. The next slide just demonstrates clinics. The total number there of clinics electrified is 359, and most of the clinics are usually electrified by the Department of Health itself, and they do that through our normal business. That is, they will apply and then it will be a normal connection. Then schools connected year to date, that is the current year, then it's about 704, Chair, that is the schools that will be done in this year and finished by the year end, given the grants that we've got in the year. Then the next one is to deal with, that's the slide I will skip, is to deal with the findings of the Eastern Cape Oversight Visit. There was the Matamsholo Junior Primary School, which is built with sticks and has no electricity, which is in your report. And our response to that is that a point of supply will be brought to the school and a prepayment meter will be put. But we cannot be able to do internal wiring to the school because of safety issues. That will enable the school chair, if then now they receive grants like computers, like TVs, they will be able to use electricity because the prepayment meter will have a plug point, where then now they should be able to plug. The Nkumandeni Clinic, which has a prepayment meter without any provision for petty cash, I think that one is for Department of Health. But from our side, they have approached us, because the clinic was electrified by the Department of Health. They have approached us to upgrade the supply to 60 amps, and they do not have the money to pay for that. We've negotiated with the Department of Energy and agreed that with the grant that is at our disposal, we can do the upgrade to 60M, so we're busy doing that. The Verda Fred and Farm School, where there is a hall and it's a school and without any lights, what we are going to do there, Chair, is then normally in a farm, we negotiate with the farmer, and our assumption is that if the farmer has made a facility available, then we connect from the farmer's meter or from his transformer to connect the school and make sure that then now the school has got electricity. And then the Manzana Senior Secondary School, this is in Ngobo. That's a prefab structure. Prefab structures, they either come with internal wiring. That becomes easy because then now you are able to connect because you get a certificate of compliance. But if they don't come with a COC, then what we cannot be able then now to do internal wiring. But what we are able to do there as well is to bring in a point of supply and give the school then now a prepayment meter so that they are able then now to use electricity for, you know, if they've got photocopies, if they've got computers. The last one then now will be the Manzana Clinic, which in the report is highlighted as having inadequate capacity of 20 amps already by the, I've been assured that now the upgrade to 60 amps will be completed by the 25th of October. So they will be having a CCM supply which will be adequate to cater for their needs. Thank you very much, Chair.
That was the Department of Energy. And ESCOM. That was ESCOM. It's fine. Again, you have just confined yourself to this. It's fine. Human settlement. Good morning.
Good morning, chairs and members and officials. I'm not going to present any school and water program in schools because the Department of Education has presented what they have presented exactly, because we work in committee to manage the program. We were implementing on behalf of the Department of Health and also on behalf of the Department of Education. The information is the same. It will be just a waste of time if I start talking about those things. The only thing I can say, they put up a big figure for all what of the budget required to do to take care of the infrastructure in school. I would like to be much more specific. For schools, water and sanitation, we need almost 4, 5, 6, 7, 6, 3 million rand to complete. And out of that amount, the water money we need is 259,050,000. That is almost a quarter billion. And then for sanitation, we need 197,680.
Where is your presentation?
It's just one page. I had a presentation, but I said, let me not dispute because it's the same. But I was just becoming specific on our water and sanitation program. That's this page, which says how much specific are for water and also for schools. It's somewhere, but you don't even have to get it.
And you're only referring to
our program?
In the Eastern Cape only?
Not nationally. This is a national figure, this one. Not Eastern Cape.
Okay, continue.
That is all. But from the presentation we had from education, there's something which we have been asking ourselves. We don't get the picture of how much the provincial departments of education are contributing towards the eradication of the water and sanitation backlog, because the required must be big, whereas there are allocations which goes to the province and they are doing some work and they don't come out. I'm sure Mr. Mathew will agree. We don't get the figures from education to say how much has been done to eradicate the backlog. Or are they just doing with additional sanitation facilitation required and water facilities required by school, or new schools they are putting up, they are constructing in the provinces? If not, they should be giving some figure to say, from our budget of infrastructure budget of the province, this is how much are we doing, so that the Department of Education National is able to compute exactly what is the backlog. We only feature them because we are just implementing agent of the department to deal specifically with the backlog, especially those schools which our criteria is only those schools and clinics which had nothing at all. Many schools which are mentioned here, they've got some kind of sanitation and some kind of water. It's the same with the clinics. When you say we've finished the clinic, it means we've finished the clinic with nothing. But there are clinics with inadequate which are not finished. They don't have water and sanitation. I think that's all I could say.
Thank you. But you know, what you haven't mentioned, you know, we had a very... I think that you must give credit sometimes where it is due. You know, we had a very energetic and lady, you know, who came from Human Settlement. I just forget what you call her.
Amanda.
Amanda, I think she's Amanda. You know, very, what you call it, energetic person who really wants to work. Mm-hmm. You know what she told us, amongst other things, is that the Department of Education does not come to party. They go to Department of Education, they want information, the Department of Education doesn't provide. That's what she told us. It's not only, it was not only from human settlement that we heard that. From the officials of the Department of Education. I'm sure when the members engage, you'll hear that. They're very frustrated about the Eastern Cape Department of Education. Because every year, beginning of the year, Mr. Mioli is also there. It was the same. Every beginning of the year, they are told to be sure, says, come up with your priorities. They say they come up with priorities, it ends there. You know? So I thought that someone would mention that, because that's what people, including Mr. Mioli, were frustrated about when they say, that's why schools, now the national departments ended up being dependent on the individual schools making applications because the department is not doing it. Okay. National Treasurer. But before you come in, it's a pleasure. There's no Department of Education. Are you going to present, or should Ms. Fano present?
Yeah,
I will go and handle it.
I'll suggest that Ms. Fano start, and then Janari gives some additional comments on education, and I'll give some additional comments on health.
Does it depend? Sorry.
Somebody was just arrived from education recently.
Okay, I was told that. He's having another mandate. Let's hear from the person. We'll hear from the person. Now, let's hear then from that person first. Who is, can you just lift up your hand? Are you from education?
Yes, I'm from education.
In the Eastern Cape?
Yes.
Now we're talking about education and health, and there's no one either from education or health from Eastern Cape who is here to say, no, these things that are said here are correct. But yes, it's correct that we wanted the just also interested in the global, what you call a picture that was presented by if you want to make any addition, unfortunately you were not there when education was presenting. Maybe you'll come later. Then, okay, let's just continue with the way you were planning. Ms. Fano? You were not here when people were introducing themselves. You may as well introduce yourself.
Thank you, everyone.
It's working.
No, it will work as long as here. It must work.
Thank you very much. I think what's important is that I'll first give a bigger picture and just to indicate why we're all here. I'm from National Treasury, Mr. Gennari is also from National Treasury, and Mark is also from National Treasury. The hat I've got on is I'm looking at the intergovernmental system, so the funding that goes to provinces and local government. Mr. Gianotti looks at the education sector and Mark Bletcher looks at the health sector. And we've all got a keen interest in this issue. What I'll do is I'll give a bit of an overview of what is currently happening with the funding in provinces.
Excuse me, just before you do that, let's just tell you where we started. Where we started, we said there were grants that were terminated. And would like whatever you are to call you present to respond to that. That as a committee, is that we want those grants reinstated so that the electricity and sanitation can be extended to those schools and clinics. You may continue.
Thank you very much. On that issue, and it's, I'll leave that question also to Mr. Gennari also to respond to, but just to put that into context, and it was raised in the presentation made by the Department of Energy as well,
Yes, at one stage there was uncertainty who's responsible with regard to water, sanitation, electricity in schools and clinics. So what happened didn't take place in a lot of cases. So the agreement was made that a conditional grant be put in place for 3 years to look at, because in 2001 a policy was put in place that made it very clear. A Department of Basic Education is responsible for everything related to the school, be it water, sanitation and electricity. With regard to clinics, 2001, same, the policy was made very clear. The Department of Health is responsible for the full clinic, including the supporting infrastructure and services such as water. And so this grant was put in place just to deal with the area where there was uncertainty, and that was the post-2001 period. And that grant was then put in place to eradicate those backlogs. What the feedback which we got in terms of that approach, at the end of the grant, it was reported back to National Treasury that the grant objectives were met and the grants were abolished. I mean, the evidence is now coming through that it could potentially be a case that there are still some backlogs. Department of Energy looks like they're making quite a good progress, and they're currently using also the infrastructure or integrated National Electrification Program grant, the ESCOM portion, to actually deal with the schools and clinics. So that component to some is actually provided for. The area that's slightly more uncertain is what's happening with water and sanitation and how we deal with that. But what we also need to do is actually get a very clear picture of the ones that's not addressed, that's still pre-2001. That is the one issue. Or do we actually focus on a strategy that more comprehensively look at the issue and say, let's have a big bang approach to actually completely just get the issue sorted out? Do we reintroduce the old grants, or do we look at a more comprehensive strategy that we look at a holistic approach to dealing with education and the whole school screening backlogs? Mr. Yanori can most probably give a bit more feedback on me. It's currently under development, it's being explored, most probably when the medium-term budget policy statement is released later this month, some information can be provided there as well. What has been some of the confusion to date is also who's responsible for what. And that was also one of the problems experienced when the grant was in place. And some of the feedback that you received from the Department of Water Affairs is they don't feel they're getting the support. Because the numbers of the various sector departments didn't tally. Some of the schools that in the system couldn't be addressed because it was unsafe structures, as pointed out by the Department of Energy. So it's quite a complex issue. So those are most probably, and the point was also made, we need a decent survey of schools and then look at a most probably holistic strategy of how we can take it forward. What is also currently in place from a provincial side, which is important, and that funding shouldn't be underestimated, is the infrastructure grant that goes to provinces. Keep in mind that education and health is both concurrent functions. So post-2001, the responsibility needs to be taken up by the provincial departments responsible. Just to indicate, and the point was also made by the FFC with regard to the during the session, a focus needs to be given to infrastructure development. If you look at the infrastructure grant to provinces, and I'll just start with 2008-09, the infrastructure grant to provinces amounted to 7.2 billion. In 2019, it increased to 9.2 billion, or increased by 2 billion. Despite the recession, in 2010-11, it increased to 11.3 billion. So there's definitely a drive to actually inject substantial money into the infrastructure
grant. And it's indicated not spent infrastructure grant.
Okay. And then another important point to make is that this is what we refer to as a Schedule 4 grant. What a Schedule 4 grant means, it's not exclusively funded through that conditional grant. It's the responsibility of the province to use its own resources as well to actually supplement that. So the Schedule 4 grant is actually put in place to put in place the correct levers
so that you can actually get provinces to do the right thing. So there's quite an extensive program in National Treasury to actually assist provinces to actually run infrastructure in a coherent way and to appropriately plan for that as well. Just to give a bit more highlight on the infrastructure grant program spending, and I'm just going to zone in on Eastern Cape. In 2008, or the 2007-08 financial year, they spent 91% of the infrastructure grant to provinces. In 2009, they spent 92.8%. In 2010, they spent 90.6%. So the figure's actually gone up slightly, and then it's last year it's gone down again. Just also then to indicate what they're currently doing with respect to their budgets. Let me just get the page. Because we can provide a breakdown as well for the 2010-11 budget, exactly what they're doing with the infrastructure grant money. For example, with regard to the infrastructure grant to provinces, and I'm just referring to education now and the infrastructure money that goes to education from the overall pool, $3.8 billion is made available through the IGP grant for education infrastructure. And the equitable share from provinces then amounts to 3.9, which indicates that more funding is made available through provincial owned sources than through grant funding. Again, keep in mind that this is what is planned, doesn't necessarily pan out the actual spending. With regard to the Eastern Cape, they budgeted for the 2010-11 financial year to spend equitable share of $808 million through equitable share and $506.6 million through the infrastructure grant to provinces.
So it's about $1.3 billion.
Yeah, that's correct. Yes. And then just to give a bit of a breakdown on what they've actually done, because we can also provide a breakdown per province on what they've done with the infrastructure education money, and just to zone in on Eastern Cape in particular. With regard to fencing, for example, they've got currently on the table 2,960 projects on the table for education. 187 of them is related to fencing. With regard to sanitation and toilet buildings, they've got 435 projects on the go. With regard I'm just zoning in also on water, 593 projects on the go to address water infrastructure in schools. And if you actually compare it to other provinces, they're not. This is the only province that actually does that type of investment in those two areas. If you compare it against other provinces, for example, let me just get the second highest province with regard to sanitation and toilets is KZN, which got 187 projects on the go, and Mpumalanga's got 103 projects on the go. If you then look at water, the closest competitor in terms of projects is again KZN with 55 projects for water, and followed by Mpumalanga 42 projects. And the remainder is actually going into school infrastructure per se.
But you said Eastern Cape has got how much?
With regard to electricity, they've got 13 projects. Sanitation and toilets, they've got 435, and with regard to water, they've got 593 out of that 2,960 projects on the table.
You're done? Okay, can switch off now.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Spencer Gennari. I'm also from the National Treasury in the Public Finance Division, where I work with the education budget in particular. So I'll confine my comments to education. I think Ms. Spano already covered some of the background and the history with regard to the grant. I think just what I want to support from our side, from public finance side anyway, in particular, is that Ms. Spano raised the issue of whether the reintroduction of a similar grant should be favored over a more consolidated approach. And it is our view in particular that the latter approach be favored, in that there be a consolidated plan to, I think as the DBE presentation earlier spoke to, a consolidated plan to bring all schools up to that level of basic functionality, which in effect would then include water, sanitation and electrification, as well as ensure that the structures are built with appropriate materials. I think that from our some of our lessons from the previous, this particular grant that we're talking about, was that there seemed to be a lack of coordination, where there were a number of projects going on towards the same ideal at the same time, and not the communication between the various elements to that wasn't always as it should be. And either we have to fix that coordination problem radically, or the solution is that the education departments in the provinces take ownership of the project and are responsible for ensuring that all the elements that lead to or that contribute to the education of children is their responsibility. I think one of the problems that in the ESCOM presentation that was also highlighted was the lack of responsibility for maintenance by the Department of Education or the Departments of Education for some of these installations that were made at remote schools. And I think that part of the reason for the lack of responsibility is the lack of ownership, that if they are responsible for the project themselves, for bringing the whole package, so to speak, together for education, then there's greater buy-in, or there tends to be greater buy-in for the maintenance responsibilities that go there with. And so that is certainly what we would favor. But of course, one of the dynamics that we also have to consider is that education, or the education department, does not bring the grid from wherever it is to the school. And so that, similarly with water and sanitation, they can only deal with it when it's at the school gate, really. And so there still has to be that kind of coordination. But I think that the electrification and water and sanitation at school, going forward, certainly should be prioritized, certainly as well, but that it should be the responsibility of the Departments of Education to take this forward in a consolidated approach. Thank you.
Okay.
If I could just briefly, firstly, I really appreciate your calling this hearing. I've also had many experiences similar to committee members of visiting clinics that were really quite shocking, visiting clinics where, for example, toilets were locked, not even available to people, or if you can even get the key to unlock them, that they are so dirty and not maintained that they're completely unusable. So I really I think that this is a real problem that does need to be addressed. The Department of Health, working with Water Affairs and Forestry when they did the project, because Water Affairs and Forestry were mainly responsible for the water and sanitation side in the health case, and ESCOM with Energy were doing the electrification. Energy. They graded the problems into a number of different grades. The problem wasn't so much the grade one of clinics having no water and no electricity. Most of them had something. The problem was, in most cases, it was completely inadequate, not maintained, one toilet for 100 people rather than, say, one for 50 people, terrible maintenance, no facilities for disabled. So the project, Water Affairs had to report on the project, and I don't think that they reported frequently enough, even the documentation I've got from Health, and I can share with you some of the documentation we've got from Health. I think even Health doesn't have the final reports and many of the detailed reports of the final completion of the projects. But certainly in some of the interim reports that I have, they showed at least 200 clinics having water and sanitation work done on them. I do think a lot of the problem is in the provinces and at the more decentralized levels in the provinces, the districts and the facilities themselves. We do know that provincial departments of health budget $8 billion a year for capital expenditure, and of which last year they underspent $2 billion. So departments of health are underspending on their capital money, but also there's a management problem, Chairperson, because a lot of the departments of health don't decentralize. So you get the clinic, and the clinic's got its toilets blocked. Now, the clinic doesn't think to, or they don't feel they have the authority to get the plumber to come and unblock the toilets. So they wait for the Department of Public Works to come after 2 years to come and unblock the toilets. And, you know, so there's a problem in the decentralizing of basic maintenance functions to the facility level, which you also have to get sorted out. You know, a facility manager has to take responsibility for their facility, and they need to have the budget, you know, at hand to be able to sort out routine maintenance kinds of problems. I agree with the point that was made, I think, by one of the speakers, that health does not have a good information system on infrastructure. Its information systems on infrastructure in clinics is much worse, in fact, than the Department of Education's information systems, like its NEMA surveys and so on and so forth. The National Department of Health does not have a good database on the state in clinics. We have given them about $30 million for an infrastructure audit, and an audit of clinics, which has taken about 2 or 3 years in planning. It's still not actually started. Hopefully it will start soon. But also the Department of Health does not have very strong norms and standards as to how many you know, toilets you should have, of what standard, and so on and so forth. So I think that at all levels of the system there is still room for quite a lot more work here, Chairperson.
Okay. Thank you very much. I think we have all presented now. You want to present just briefly? Where can we find the space for you? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Now just sit next to the chairperson here.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. My apology for coming late. I only managed to get a flight this morning. I want to also apologize for the head of the department's absence. His wife is in hospital, and he also asked me to apologize for him not being here. Chair, I have a brief presentation. Maybe I will not be able to respond completely. But I am appreciative of the inputs, in particular the Treasury has made, and this is why I will not dwell on that, where they have actually highlighted the extent in which the department is intervening in the case of water and sanitation, etc. But we must also say, Chair, you know...
You can introduce yourself.
Sorry, Chair. Yes, my name is Aldred Frey, and I'm the acting chief director for facilities management. I've just taken over the portfolio this week, officially. But, Chair, I have been in the program. I must also say I've been out of the program for a year, but I've also been in the program since 1995. So I want to say up front, Chair, after so many years, we must say from department, from education in Eastern Cape, there are still many backlogs that we are facing. In terms of mud structures alone, Honorable Chair, we've got, in terms of our NEEMS information, we have about 395 mud structured schools, plus there's another less than 200 schools that we need, that it's partly mud structured but also need some urgent intervention, and the department is undertaking
a verification process shortly. There is a document on the table which will do a proper verification of our mud structures and look at those inappropriate structures that we are currently still facing with. And I'm happy that our DDG from Treasury in the province is also here, who will be able to say that there are attempts from the Eastern Cape government to access additional funding to try and deal with the inappropriate structures in a shorter period. There is a discussion with the with DBSA and other funders in order to deal with that. But Chair, maybe just in terms of this presentation, I just wanted to maybe talk about the budget, because Treasury has indicated there has been fluctuations in our expenditure. There has been some unexpenditure in the 2009-10 financial year, and then maybe reasons. And then, Chair, you have also mentioned about the manner in which we prioritize the infrastructure program, and the frustration that our schools at the cold face level do have with that process. If I can just go to the next slide. The under expenditure, if I can just maybe say, since it has been mentioned, the under expenditure on the conditional grant and the equitable share, and then the omission of Manzana, which is also part of the report. Chair, there we have a slide which just talked to what was the budget and what was the expenditure up to the end of December, and the balance per program. I will not deal with that because we do have a slide there. On the under expenditure for 2009-10, the under expenditure was in respect of the following allocations: equitable share 33 million and the conditional grant 77 million. And then we have just reasons, because part of it we were saying, why is there an underspending when the department is faced with such huge backlogs? Chair, the experience that we had there, the over expenditure as a whole during the last quarter, as you can say, the expenditure has been fairly well up to the last quarter, where it meant that all payments in the last quarter were stopped. This meant that contractors stopped work and moved their workers off site. Now, part of that, Chair, was the department landed up into difficulty with its budget towards the end of the 2009-10 financial year. All projects were affected by the pending over expenditure, almost something like 800 million in the department's budget. Whether projects were allocated to conditional grants or whatever, those projects were stopped, and we had limited runs in order to pay our suppliers in terms of trying to reduce the over expenditure. Treasury will be able to expand on that if they do get an opportunity. So we could not commit any more funds for replacement contractors and new contractors. So that month has really affected the program, which also brought us into this financial year where we had difficulty in really stabilizing the program. So in other words, what we are saying, Chair, in terms of our unexpenditure, there's 33 million and the conditional grant is 77 million. We are very much appreciative that this money, particularly the conditional grant, has now been granted in terms of the adjustment estimate back to the department. Chair, and then maybe the last thing is just the issue of the prioritization, where we do, just in this slide, indicate the procedure that the department follows. I think you have picked up in your visits that the principals and SGBs are saying that every year we change. Chair, that is in fact something that we really try to deal with, because in this particular case where we say we have a B5 or a B6 where projects are lined up for a particular financial year, and then when there are particular problems that we do incur, does take some projects over to another financial year, which does affect the expectations that communities have in terms of the building of their schools. So I will not go into that. We just tried in this slide to say this is the ideal process that we follow, where we bring in the SGPs, we bring in the circuit manager, we bring in the districts, they then sit and prioritize, and then in the end it comes to head office, and in terms of the budget that we've got available, that is how we then put together the program over the medium term expenditure framework. Chair, we are now again in terms of the large number of mud structures having a relook. There is also the issue of the prioritizing the the small schools that we have in the province. You know, there's quite a number of small schools that we are looking at rationalizing. So that is also going to affect our program. But in terms of this slide, we try as far as possible not to deviate from our program. Chair, then maybe the last thing is, in the case of Manzana, the school was not on the priority list in the 2010-11, and then during the visit to Ngobo District, Manzana was not on the priority, and that was presented to the meeting. Instead, we were, in that particular case, given the Pakamani Senior Secondary School, where a priority was given to the senior secondary school, which came onto the program in 2009. And then we say, in terms of this school, Manzana, it is on the 2011-12 program of the department. Chair, I think I will stop there and contribute when there are questions later on. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, you will contribute. So we're told that you prioritize this year, you change next year. There's no proper, what you call it. I mean, it's what your district directors were telling us. Ms. Dugata, you want to add? You may reintroduce yourself.
Okay, I'm Mendo Dugata from the Eastern Cape Provincial Treasury. Thank you, Chair. I think what we...
Sorry, you heard what he said. He said you stopped even the conditional grants, what you call the project, ring first as they were, but you said they must stop in spite of that. Okay, you can continue with your presentation.
I think in the province how we are approaching the whole issue of the mud structure and your unhealthy structures, we've taken a view that we do fall short in terms of planning, and why we have got a special project that is we've identified 539 schools and about 4,113 classrooms, looking at what the Department of Education has given us, and there we would wish to make a special project that would have the facet of scaled up delivery, because we are very much concerned about the cost, the timeliness of the project, the quality, and who is to deliver those issues. And the issues that are related to both water, sanitation, and electricity will issues that would form part of this integrated approach. So we have approached both National Treasury and DBSA, and we have also seen that part of the challenge that we've got is after the planning that we still say has to be corrected. When we implement those projects in the province, we've got pre-implementing agents that we're currently using, and I think at a departmental level in education and also in health, we're very much challenged in terms of monitoring the kind of amount that has gone through those implementing agents. So we are wanting, we're having discussions with DBSA in terms of the plan that we've presented to National Treasury and DBSA, they are going to assist us in terms of the monitoring capability that they would bring into the project. Initially, we had thought that would get extra funding, but I think in terms of the discussions not only of the Eastern Cape, throughout the country, on addressing issues that are related to infrastructure. I think there would be issues that would be related to the conditional grant in the next financial year. So the amount that has been allocated to the IGIP in this financial year, we're wanting to use it throughout the, we had sort of thought that we'd use a 10-year period, but with the discussions that we're having with National Treasury, it could, I think the Ministry is wanting real delivery short space of time, and we're looking, we want it a year, but we're sort of saying over 2 years, only on the actual delivery rather than the planning, thinking that we have already done the planning. The other issues that are related to chair the issue of the over expenditures and us not doing certain projects, I think what is very critical is this issue of the planning, because for the, not for the first time, but what we're currently doing in the Eastern Cape, we're saying the projects that are already, that we've gone to Parliament on, what has been happening in other years, you go to Parliament, to legislature, you say you'll be doing 2,900 projects for one reason or the other, you do 2,000 projects, but the ones that are different to what you have put to Parliament. So your infrastructure reporting model this time around, wanting to really work on it. And I think through the assistance of National Treasury, through the IDIP, because you'd note that we've had IDIP phase 1 and phase 2, phase 3 is a bit different, and it is going to assist us to really look into the issues of planning, implementation, monitoring and reporting. So I would sort of say at an executive level, the issue of the mass structure in the Eastern Cape, your report, we can't really dispute it, Chair. It's things that are happening, but in terms of a framework that has been developed at an executive level, I think we are well underway in terms of making significant progress, because we're not necessarily going to use only the implementing agents that we're using, and even the ones that we're using, we're sort of saying we'll build in structures that would really monitor. But the critical issue that I'm happy about in terms of this is the whole issue of integrated planning, because you'd find that when you go to the National Department of Education, perhaps they do not know what we are doing as a treasury, and we do not know what they are doing as a National Department of Education. So I'm really happy that this project now it is going to be done at least appropriately now, and the stage that we're in now is the verification. We've done verifications before. That's what we are saying, and they have not given us to a very great extent what we'd like, because every time we talk about the figures, you'd find that you have different a sort of figures that we're talking to. So we're saying the stage that we're at now, we are wanting to verify the 539 schools. We're awaiting that the Department of Education that issues the letter to one of the implementing agents, and then DBSA would be monitoring that, and then we'll just look at that. And we're saying if we could do good in this project, because it will run parallel to the broader picture of the other equitable grant, because the reality of the matter is that why you are able to take money out of infrastructure is because money is sitting there, it is not doing anything. So that's the part that we're trying to address at an executive and at a technical level. And I think, if I can say, Chair, not that meetings, they make us work, but I think at an executive level, on a weekly, bi-weekly basis, there's a report on the progress of this project. And we've taken a lot of time, we can agree with Eastern Cape, talking to National Treasury and also DBSA on this matter, because initially we had hoped that the loan route, if we are not getting additional funding, but when you look at the all provinces, what is happening, we had to change that. So I think the matter has been addressed at the Budget Council, and at the Joint Budget Council, and also the very last one that we've had, that we might be getting good progress in terms of additional money, whether it would be a conditional grant, and issues of maintenance in the Eastern Cape province. I guess throughout the country, we're not really looking at those, and this grant and the money that we're putting forward would be would be able to report on that. So, thanks, Chair.
You didn't comment about health.
In health, it is true that the issue of the norms and standards is still a challenge, and with health in terms of the implementing agents, you find that with education we've used three implementing agents for quite a long time, but with health, even at level of implementing agents, they've been having some challenges because, as we would all know, sometimes public works doesn't take us much forward, so we need to be a bit proactive in terms of those issues. But the second issue in health, we've sort of looked at the themselves. There isn't a better relationship between the head office and the departments and the districts and their hospitals. And this issue of the delegations, I think it is an issue that we are really working out. But with health, we don't necessarily have a concerted program as education. But at an executive level, we're hoping that we would have started with the implementation of education so that we could be able what we are getting and just replicate it. So you'd find that the planning that we're doing with it is not at a good level that we'd like to have it. But what we've done, because we're stepping up the issue of the ID, they also have been allocated a technical assistance unit to assist them from the National Treasury, and that's working together with the Provincial Treasury on that issue. So health, I do agree that we're still a bit challenged. Even this year, we might not be doing quite well. But
well, you ending on that note, that makes me to think about the Public Finance Management Act, the role of Treasury as well. Because Treasury is not just a passive, what you call a friend. I mean, it's not just a passive stand there. I mean, a partner there. He's supposed to have a role. And the PFMA is very clear about what role is Treasury supposed to play. But let me just open it to members. I mean, 12 o'clock now, presentations all the time.
My
colleague.
So with your indulgence, I do need to leave just now. I have another meeting to chair. So if I may, and it seems to me that what we will need to do is to obviously have follow-up meetings on this very issue. Because you see, from the beginning and until Eastern Cape spoke, Department of Education, I didn't quite understand what the problem is. But let me give you a very brief sense. You see, if you leave it to a principal to say what is wrong with his school, you're going to have people vying with each other, because I could have the best facilities, but my aircon is not working, so I think it's very, very important. And I put it as, and you know, depending on personalities, you then get to the top of the list. That's the problem. And that's why you're getting schools that are not necessarily meant to be on those priority lists, on those lists, and those schools that you have a less, should we say, proactive principal, but who are in need of assistance, not featuring on the list. So I think that's the fundamental problem in terms of how we're planning. The district offices have a role to play in this regard, and I'm not sure what their role is from the presentation. So I do think that what we need, and I think one of the lessons we learned out of this process, is that we can't have departments coming here and saying it's 504 schools or 212 schools. In future, what we need to do is we need to say school XYZ is currently an inappropriate structure, because now we have categorization for the first time. It's an inappropriate structure. It's going to take X amount to make it an optimum structure. And we have lists like that being presented to Parliament so that next year we can say to the department, well, this school has been on the list for 5 years now.
Mm-hmm.
What have you done to move it into category number two? So I think that's in future how we would expect departments to respond. And certainly from our side, the Department of Basic Education is here. One of the things that I think you can already start doing is to start consolidating those priority lists per province in terms of categorization and where they are at the moment and whether they're on the priority list or not. We will certainly follow through with that issue. The second thing is raised by the FFC. You see, I think that we don't do sufficient investigation on the sources of funding. There's energy, there's Department of Basic Education, there are grants coming from National Treasury. All of these are resources, and I'm not sure that we optimally use them. Now we're going to approach DBSA for loans. What did we do? I don't think we have a very clear picture, for example, as much as we're saying 91% of the conditional grant was spent, what has been achieved with the 91%? Did we pay consultants to draw up lists? Or did we actually spend on infrastructure? In other words, delivery issues. And I don't think we've done that kind of assessment. I don't think we have a clear understanding ourselves as to the sources of funding. I must say, until today, I certainly didn't understand the role of Department of Energy, for example, or ESCOM in regard to schools. We've always thought that that was top-up issues, you know, over and above your normal course of business. But actually, when we do do oversight with regard to the Department of Education and its budget on infrastructure, it seems to me very appropriate that energy should be part of it. And I'm sure water affairs has got a budget as well. And how they factor in is going to be quite crucial. Chair, I think it's been an eye-opener, and I certainly, together with you, will hope that we take this process further. But I think what can be done at the very least, and I think Treasury really, you know, I've been trying very hard to get Treasury to come to the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education. I'm very happy that we're able to hear from Treasury now. Because I do think what you said finally is absolutely crucial. If we do not have a sense how Treasury is monitoring some of these issues and what Treasury's perspective is in regard to these deliverables, I think we're kind of limping in our expectations of what the provinces are capable of, because you have a very clear sense of capacities in provinces. I think that's basically what you do in terms of monitoring and so on. So I do think that when we do this and we do request Treasury's involvement, I will certainly speak to Mr. Gennari after this meeting and take it up with him. I've unfortunately been dealing directly with your DG and have not really had a good response from that office. But thank you very much for your initiative, Chair. You can rest assured that as the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education, you have our support and commitment in this regard, and we, as far as possible, will try and take this matter further together with yourself, and our report will include some issues certainly going forward in this regard. I do thank you, and may I please
well, thank you very much. You really, I know that from the beginning, you had indicated that you would like to leave, but we really appreciate that you just were glued on this education and health report. We appreciate also your presence here. And Dr. James as members of the education, but I hope that out of this meeting something positive will come up. That will also give you a feedback in terms of what we have resolved. Thank you. Dr. James, you wanted to.
Yes, thank you very much. I also want to apologize because I also have to leave.
with your permission, quite soon. I had a very specific question for directed towards the Eastern Cape, and just to focus the mind, if we were living in the People's Republic of China, officials responsible for the mismanagement and corruption of money would actually be executed. Now, luckily, we are not living in the People's Republic of China.
It's good, you know.
But the question is, you know, it's about accountability.
Sure.
And so I wanted to very specifically ask, and you might not be the official responsible for the decision, but apparently the Eastern Cape government has decided to defend a case that has been brought against it by Seven Mud Schools and Rhodes University for not meeting the constitutional requirements around access to education. And to defend it, the Eastern Cape government has to spend money. So it's perverse, is my conclusion. That why do you decide to defend something that is indefensible, and you know it's indefensible, and you're going to commit taxpayers' money to that defense? It doesn't make any sense. While at the same time, the hard schools continue, and I visited one of those hard schools last Friday, 40 kilometers outside of Mthatha, and I mean, it was terrible. And the committee has seen that too. That's my very specific question. My general comment is that it seems among many of the problems that we have is the lack of regional or local project, integrated project delivery systems. And that's the most compelling issue that we would need to address as a parliament and as a government. Because as long as we don't have that, we can have the money from Treasury, but we actually can't spend the money properly. And it's no good centralizing things, saying that it'll be a national project, which is fine, I understand that the national political will would reside there. And I would agree with that. But to make it work on the ground, you require regional delivery project management that is sensitive to local conditions, because one size does not fit all. So you can't go there with a single energy delivery system. It has to be molded to the environment.
Thank you. It's fine, thanks.
Thank you, Chair.
I will start with Comrade Sarabram.
Thank you, Chair. I want to find out from the Department of Energy, how did they address the issue of solar theft and vandalism? Because they reported here only to the one that we visited. I want to find out what is the total situation, because, and what maintenance programs are in place. It's not necessary to have 100 solar heaters and only 20 work. Rather put in 20 and all 20 work and it's better. The Department of Provincial Education, and the other thing is also the tanks.
Mm.
I see water tanks here, but the point is, how many of them still have tanks? How many of them are functioning effectively? Jefferson, then, about, I think, the backlogs of priority list, Department of Provincial Education.
Yeah, yeah.
Mr. Frey.
No, we're not in Rabi here, please.
That's it. But my point is about how are you addressing the infrastructure of backlogs? Because going to the priority list, we had problems. And then to the National Department of Education, we experienced it. What is the position of the teachers that is not on time when they are supposed to be on time? What are you doing to address it? Thank you.
Now, thank you very much. But for members that are will come after you. Let's just try to confine ourselves to this one so that we don't put the department in a corner. We ask, for instance, from departments at least to send those people who deal with infrastructure. I don't know if Mr. Mafugu then will be able to respond to other questions, but maybe CFO can do that. Honorable Swast.
Chair, thank you. I was very pleased to learn about the focus in that there's going to be some program in terms of which they're going to now determine which schools, you know, actually require attention and which don't, and the procedure in which they're going to be tackled. But what worries me is that in the same breath, you hear that the, you know, contractors are moved off-site because they're not being paid by the department. How are those contractors going to come back and say, you know, I will work for this province again?
Hmm.
And I'm sure there will also be legal claims against the, you know, against the province for having been moved off-site. You know, and then we're asking for additional funding. You know, we want to access additional funding, but we don't spend what we've got. So, you know, I really don't understand why, you know, how this whole process, you know, is seemingly going to work. And then at the same time, as you said yourself, you know, we're holding back on equitable share and conditional grants, which has really got nothing to do. It's ring-fenced funds, and it's got to be applied for specific jobs. So, you know, to me, there's a huge capacity and planning problem particularly the Eastern Cape, and I think it should receive our attention, and we should check regularly, as your co-chair said this morning, you know, as to whether they actually sticking to the residue program and following that. Then, Chair, I think you can help me here. Maybe it was the chair of the parent body of that mud school, the Machanshole school,
mm-hmm.
who said that the MEC for Eastern Cape set aside
yeah.
1 million rand. To have that mud school broken down and replaced.
Mm, and the money is still sitting.
And the money is still sitting somewhere, and it's just nowhere. Mm. You know, and really, I just want to know what happened to that money and where is it, and maybe Treasury in the Eastern Cape can help us with that.
And education is here. Comment, Mr. Hama?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I was also going to refer to that school in the
Makamso
school, because it was, if we look at what our policies are, that we should at a certain period not have mass schools, and they tell us that they were on the top priority, and suddenly they are not on the list anymore. That causes concern, because they were given a date. That causes concern, and we'd like to know why that school in a very poor area was removed from the priority list from 2007 up to now. And it's just a bit, because we'd also like to know where the responsibility lies, because we think the Department of Education, those district officials also are accountable, and if they are not here to respond on what we know, because what they told us is what we saw, and what we hear here might contradict what they said, because they are on their own capacity accountable members who deal directly with the SGBs and all, and for the money to be diverted when it's being budgeted for those schools, we really need a thorough explanation. And what is not, what I don't know from me, the presentation from the lady from the Treasury in the Eastern Cape really is not satisfactory at all, because it was full of shifting blames to other people, where they are actually there to look at what is needed, especially when we got thorough briefing from the SGBs, the circuit managers, the district managers, that everything is at Bishop. That's what they said. And when they say at Bishop, they were referring to the provinces. And when everything is there, and National Treasury has allocated funding, we don't know what the verification of schools, because those schools were verified to be on the planning for proper buildings. So really, if we need any better presentation, I think better presentation should come from Provincial Treasury of the Eastern Cape, because that was not satisfactory at all. Moving from health or education, because education was part of it, has and that presentation memoirs really full of excuses and it's not acceptable. Maybe if you can rethink about it and present to us something that will be more, will have some integrity and be readable, maybe we'll understand it. And when coming to health and water is here. We were given a statement.
Yeah.
We were given just a statement by an engineer who said they had a tablet. I think Amanda was there. I don't know whether you did a follow-up about that very effective enzyme tablet or what, which could save us a lot of money. I don't know whether Amanda reported to you about it because they said she was as energetic as ever. I think she energetically told me to talk to you about that enzyme tablet. And in the meantime, Mr. January, we are very happy about this RCD, but and the fact that the discarded grant, I know you're not for the reintroduction. It's not my concern whether it's reintroduced or consolidated in the new program. But in the interim, what could be happening, because there are those backlogs, are they receiving attention and the remaining ones are going to be consolidated? That did not come out very clearly. And Department of Energy, I'm finishing, sir.
No. Take your time.
You gave us a good presentation.
I know there were many presenters.
On page 22, in your conclusion, you mentioned about all the known electrifiable backlogs are planned and will be electrified before the end of the year. Can in January we get something that tell us that it's the end of the year and all the non-electrifiable backlogs are attended to? And the last one is on energy. Eskom has a good presentation, but you don't have due dates. And that causes concern because it was nice to present, but if we have that date, it's a very good presentation. Can you please give us a due date about it?
Mapala.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation. My colleague has just mentioned the team from the Department of Health. Does the Department of Health work together with the Department of Education? Because it looks like Eastern Cape is the worst water poor province. So you can't be having latrines year after year. So coming back to the enzyme, can you work together with the Department of Health to begin to address that issue, so that you have the pit batteries dislodged timeously?
It looks like the Treasury, maybe Treasury, can you just let us know if there is capacity within the staff that you have in the various department to be able to use the funds effectively for the purpose for which they were meant? And secondly, the budget that was given to you, talking again in terms of capacity, does the performance of the capacity that you have show you any value for money in particular? Because this is taxpayers' money. I think it was Energy that spoke about maintenance of solar panels of the solar system. Say, in the Eastern Cape, the schools and the clinics that we visited, your statement is not quite true. Because they were saying after those panels were put in place, they were given a number, a toll-free number. They phoned that number, and there was never a response. They had no manuals. So if there is a way of having maintenance people to go to that place, can somebody, Energy, energy, treasury, whoever, make sure that all those solar panels are not put there to waste because there is no way of maintenance. If the agencies that are being employed to do that cannot do their work properly, why are they kept in place? That's the question that one would like to know. And we are also told that solar is used for, particularly in health, for refrigeration of vaccines. It's not reliable, if I may say, coming from the health background myself, it's not a reliable source of energy. People, they are using gas over and above the solar. They are using gas. And in one of the clinics, we're just smelling gas all the way. The moment we got there, it was just gas. And we're wondering how people are able to sleep in those buildings where gas smells from right 24 hours around the clock. And yet there is solar. Maybe if you can just help us clarify those things, we would say next time we come around, it would be much better. Thank you. But we need a lot of information from Treasury, a lot of information from energy. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mapolo. The other members don't have questions. No, it's fine. Well, from this side of the table, we have welcomed you, teaching, and thank you very much for coming in your busy schedule. We know that these days people are running around like headless chickens. Thank you very much for coming. Okay.
Human settlement. The projects that are taking place in the Eastern Cape, in our view, they are very much relevant to the extended public works programs. Are you exploiting that avenue? Thank you.
The report here shows that they are not taking advantage of that. That's what our report says. Well, thank you very much. From my side, I think that the objective of this meeting was we had this grant. They were stopped. Now, and as a committee, we're saying that they have not achieved the purpose. Now, from the presentation, I just couldn't, what you call it, get that now this grant has achieved the purpose and therefore they must, what you call it, they must be stopped. The presentation, I think from I can't remember now, in the Eastern Cape, someone said it would be up to 2009. I mean, when the grants were terminated, when the grants would be terminated, it would be because the new schools from there, Department of Education, would now have this, would be electrified, would have access to water, would have access to sanitation. But, you know, we struggled with FFC is quite correct. You ask for figures from the Department of Education in the Eastern Cape, they give you something else. You ask for figures from this source, you get something different. I'm telling you, it depends where you're getting your information. I think that the information that we got, our researcher is not here, or is here. I'm not sure who gave us information that we think that was correct. I see here what you take as a backlog. You know, Western Cape, for instance, according to this report, it said about two schools that have got structures. You know, unfortunately, all these members, for now, we all live here in the Western Cape, including those of us who don't belong here. Every day I come here, I pass schools that are built on what are these?
Precepts.
Most of the ways you go to the townships there. I travel past them, so they are prefect schools. But here the report says there are only two schools here in the Western Cape. I don't know. May could be my eyes, my counting is wrong. But that's on the way that I come here. There are more than two schools. That's on the way. Not I don't do the whole what they call the Western Cape. I don't know what happens. So now these reports, you know, we're supposed to be saying from these reports, this is the basis of our infrastructure, what you call development. But if the reports that we or the statistics that we're basing on are not correct, I'm not sure if we're going to be able to do justice to what we want to achieve. But the issue is, I haven't found someone in this house who says no, all the schools are electrified. I haven't heard someone who says, no, all the schools have got water. Small children we heard that they are sent to the river to go and get water. But the grant has been stopped, has been terminated. Members, Mr. Mioli, we were with you there. And members are saying, this solar article, I'm sorry, who was presenting? You were not here. Somebody was presenting, Fiji, on behalf of the department about solar. If I can ask Mr. Mioli now to say, are those solar maintained? So, you know what Mr. Mioli said to us there? He said, no, it's not the responsibility of ESCOM. Is the responsibility of the service provider that was employed to do this job who is not doing it, because he is on the coal face of it. He sees what is happening, so that's why he had to distance himself. But now, who is responsible for employing this service provider? Who provides this service? And I'm sorry, sir, I agree with my colleague, Honorable Ngob. Your presentation, it's so nice presentation. It says the solar system can provide for refrigerators. We must call those nurses there who sit there every day and hear if they would agree with what you're saying. So, I mean, if you invite those nurses to come here and say, what does the solar system do? What can it do? They said to us, it can only provide the lighting. That is all it can do. The rest of the job, the solar system, doesn't help. That's one thing. But the second thing, I hear these fancy names, household, what you call it, treated as household. I don't know, as an ordinary person, so what does this household mean? Does it mean that we charge the clinic is treated just as an ordinary house? But I hear many people, I've read that there's no difference between what you charge for schools, for clinics. You charge them as industrial, what you call a site. Now, they're not generating what you call they're not generating money or profit. They are there, schools and clinics are there to provide service. Now, if you charge them in that way, so, TG, what is it? Government doesn't really have this money to be charged like that, to pay for schools that are treated as if they are business, what you call a site. They're there just to provide service, like all of us here in this house are providing what you call a service. So, the issue really is also the structure of charging those, what you call those schools. But the issue really is now that we find that there are problems. We find that with problems. before I get to that, colleagues talk about sanitation. You know what we found there? Because of somebody, whether it's in the environment, whether it was you have inherited it from dwarf, from everywhere. We have raised this matter in the past with the Department of Dwarf, for instance. These pit latrines or whatever you call them, they get full, you move to the next, what you call, you dig next door. So now the whole, what you call, school will be full of, what you call, these pit latrines that have become full and closed and what. But there are systems out there that can deal with this situation once and for all, so that we don't dig all over the show. But also, I mean, people have latrines, they've got their own, what you call, challenges. And no one is, what you call, is taking responsibility for that. But the issue that we said at the beginning was that if we continue like this, it means that we're really perpetuating this gap between the urban area and the rural area. So what is it that needs? It means that something really needs to be done. From the National for National Treasury, I have, before you come in, sir, I have a message. You know, the clinic, I'm glad that ESCOM, where's ESCOM's response here? ESCOM says, this is what we're doing with Makamsholo and what? Mr. Mioli can tell you. For 2 days, I struggled to try to get who is responsible for this, who does this, why this, for 2 days. And after 2 days, my secretary also trying to get these people to speak to the right person, whether it's in Bisho, whether it's everywhere, to try to say, why can't we rectify the situation in the, what you call it, in the school there? The schools are, I mean, not the schools, the clinics, for instance, at even prepaid electricity. But there's no budget for that, Mr. Fletcher. While the clinics have got some of the clinics, they've got a prepaid electricity grid there. But there's no budget for that. We went to another clinic there. What is the name of this clinic? Nkomande. You know, there, I felt so small. The chairperson of the clinic board, he's not working, he's unemployed. But he's donating money so that there should be electricity, there should be light at the clinic. So what I saw, what we had, here are the members. They were there. I mean, people are donating out of their own pocket. There's no budget for that. But we're sitting comfortably here. You know? Those people there that we're supposed to be providing service to are suffering. There are small children that are being born there. There are no lights. Somebody said the solar system can, what you call it. We, as a committee, we prepared you to you take with us. We go there. We are willing to go with you. We go there, back there to those schools, and hear what those people are saying and hear what we're saying. So, because we're talking from we're sitting here in our comfortable chairs, but the people there who are at the coal face of service delivery are not experienced. They don't understand what we hear here. I mean, they would be surprised if you say, no, the solar can provide for a vaccination, vaccine refrigerator, can provide for another refrigerator, can provide for this. The nurses who stay, and who sacrifice. I mean, they can go to Johannesburg, to anywhere, and get employed as nurses. There's a shortage of nurses in this country. But they want to stay there. But they're staying there without lights in their, what they call, in their dormitories at the clinic. That is what we saw there. And nobody wants to take responsibility for that. Treasury. It's one of those departments that are provided for, both in the Constitution and in the water con.
Chair, if I just make one or two points. I think Mr. Janari has been fairly shy to talk about some of the forward-looking work that they have been doing with the Department. CPS will be released within a matter of 2 weeks. And in Chapter 4, there will be some attention given to this whole area, taking it forward. So I think that will be interesting to discuss after that. Also leading up, obviously, that's the medium-term policy statement leading up to the main budget. So I think Mr. Denari and his team have put a lot of effort into looking at how this might go forward in the next period. And so I think that will be an area of discussion. Secondly, if the committee hasn't seen, I did just get a copy of a document, I think from the Department of Housing, the closeout report.
From Human Settlement?
Yeah, the closeout report from Water Affairs, Health and Education on the 3-year program, which I personally hadn't seen before. So if the committee hasn't seen it, I just think it would be quite useful to see. But just from the school point, I was really quite surprised to hear about prepayment electricity for clinics here. I would like to suggest that Modern Energy relook at that. I'm not sure that it is an appropriate model for.
Now, teacher, you will respond. You will have time to respond. Okay, teacher, you want to respond?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think it's really unfortunate that some of this responsibility are spread right across government departments. On the issue in particular of prepaid metering, I must confess it's not supposed to happen for a very simple reason. Our duty, which we have in the memorandum of cooperation with the Department of Health and the Department of Education, we provide the infrastructure and the installation, and the operations thereof become the responsibility of the requisite department. That is the understanding and the agreement that we have with those departments, because it's not in our mandate as a Department of Energy to provide for those operating costs. Secondly, even if a new school is being built, we have a memorandum of understanding with the Department of Education and also even in the Department of Health that when it's a new school or a new clinic, then it must form the electricity and energy or whatever energy provision should form part of the infrastructure requirement. So that right from the word go, the building is equipped with all the necessary infrastructure in place. That is the way it's supposed to happen. And that is our understanding from the Department of Energy. And then, Chairperson, I think there are a number of issues also that have been raised, especially on the unreliability of renewable energy. Chairperson, it's a fact. Renewable energy is not reliable. You need to have a backup. But what frightens me is when the Honourable Member says that there is a backup for gas and gas was smelling. That's not supposed to happen. That's extremely dangerous. That's a potential bomb. So we need them therefore to be able to try and do. I think as a department then we need provide that solar, but also make sure that correct installation is made for the backup system to make sure then therefore that the needs are catered for. Because the fact of the matter is, if the sun is not shining, we are not going to have electricity. It's as simple as that. So therefore, we need them to come up with... it's a point that we are taking back as a department because it's a very valid point, so which we'll have to try then, therefore, to assist in making sure that whatever backup system is put in place, it's being catered for. And on the issue of the commercial rate, I think also we need also to take commercial rates to charging the clinics. Again, this matter has been raised before. Maybe ESCOM can assist me on this one. Because to be honest, this is not the first time it was raised. It was raised, and the agreement was that we're going to discuss this with around the public service. But I'm hoping ESCOM is going to assist in responding to that. I think I was not there when the presentation was made, but I think when they were talking about households treated as clinics, I think they were indicating that most of the time, once the electricity comes into, say, maybe electrifying the school, we always try as much as we can to electrify households around so that communities will take care of the infrastructure of the school because they also have the service, say for example in this case electrification. So in other words, we can bring the electricity to a school. I'm talking about grid electricity now, but we always have got to make sure that also the households around that are also being electrified. And I will also request the team to also explain why maintenance is not conducted on the on those installed solar systems.
Yeah, but also just to say, who is responsible for them?
Yes.
Because in some of them, we had members that were saying that people were saying for the past 4 years, this thing was stored 4 years ago,
yeah.
And people, they come, you know, they steal the panels and then the clinic is without lights, you know, without electricity. Okay.
I think I just want to add on the issue of those clinics that are using those gases for those refrigerators. As a department, we have already purchased the special refrigerators for those solar electrified clinics, and they are going to be installed. And they are not no longer going to use those ones that are using the gas.
By the way, you are Mr. By the way, you are Mr. who?
Mr. Majid.
You know, this committee is notorious. You know what is it notorious for? If you tell something, they go back and investigate. It's just not sufficient to tell us, and then you think that now we're satisfied. It will go back and investigate that too. So I hope that what you're telling us is a fact. Can you come on the...
You are going to have refrigerators that are going to be compliant to solar. The DG was saying if there is no sun, there is no electricity. So aren't you back to square one?
You see the other question that the same member raised earlier was saying we see the plan, yeah? But we're saying from what we have seen there, yeah? What we have seen there. There's no, what you call it, today there's a need. We're planning today, this is what we want to do in future, but the children are born there. They don't have electricity. There's solar today. I think she said her first question in the first when she got the first chance to ask was saying, or was it Honorable Nasho who was saying, what is going to be done now? We see the plans for 2020, what, but now those people are without electricity. They can't switch on their fridges. The children die, they would die. No, they have not said that children have died. But they say that they use if you haven't got the copy of the report, we can give our report. The Public Service Commission was saying, using gas, using paraffin, they use that because they have no alternative.
Thanks. Yeah, I think on those clinics that we electrified using solar, ESCOM is currently busy building lines to those
Where? In which part of the country?
In the Eastern Cape.
Unjalo, Mr. Miyoli, ne?
Okay, thank you. Continue, sir. You know there are only two clinics. All right, continue.
Yeah, I think... he is right with the two clinics, but in terms of the plan that we had with those.
Mr. Maji, you know, we really like to we're happy that you're earning your ticket for coming here to Cape Town, eh? But we're really not very impressed about this nice report. You know, it doesn't really impress us. What we want to do is we want to see if service delivery there for the people. You say that ESCOM is doing that. ESCOM is saying that they're not aware of what you're saying. So, okay. So, but I can read also a law here. If you mislead us, powers and privileges of members, I can read you that, what you call it. Maybe I should have brought it so that you don't really tell us things that don't exist.
Chair. My name is Sarah Memote, as indicated earlier. Chair, just to put a point across that the solar systems were just there as a measure of temporary. It's not the permanent thing that the department is thinking of, I mean, putting there. So as time goes by, we will be replacing.
Now, what we want to hear from you is that since you installed them 4 years ago, have you evaluated them? And what was the result of that evaluation? So that's what we want to hear. With the issue of being temporary or not temporary, I mean, these solar systems are there. They're not being, what you call it, those people, there's no plan that they will change. The clinics that we said here in this report, I said for 3 days, I sat on the phone trying to ensure that that thing is, there's a grid there. The clinic can get electricity. It was the same in Manzana. We visited only two. We found the same, what you call, a problem. So if you're saying a temporary and it is not working, what is going to be done?
But it's not being maintained, sir.
And it's not being maintained.
If I may try to respond without being defensive, it's in our audit report as well. The solar home systems program funding has not been spent to the appropriate level. In fact, we had a rollover from the previous year. And I think it's appropriate that there is some short history around this. In the Eastern Cape in particular, there was a concession that was started in 1999 in order to install these things. There are serious problems in relation to the geographical spread of these installations that had been put in very remote areas to the extent that it had become very difficult to maintain them. So it is a fact that some of the maintenance issues have not been adequately, you know, addressed from the legacy of the installation. Last year, the program was sort of suspended, and there were issues with National Treasury around that because it came across as if we were not spending earmarked funding. Well, it was not earmarked funding, but we were not spending the money. And it was precisely because among the things that we had discovered, let alone the schools and the clinics maintenance issue, was the fact that the service that was being rendered at the households was in such a manner that was even pre-qualification. Certain houses were not even getting the service and others were because the people simply could afford it. A number of initiatives were introduced. One is that it was linked with free basic electricity so that those that could not afford would be able to do that, which required contract with municipalities in that regard. Secondly, is that the school's maintenance issue was linked to the concession. So in other words, as opposed to us relying completely on the school in a particular area for maintenance and for the clinic and so on, this was now linked. You might be aware that this is not just a fiscal program, or fiscal funded program, there are donor funded programs in the Eastern Cape and in certain parts of KZN. As we speak, Chair, about I think 80 million rands that was earmarked for the program has not been spent, and it's in our audit report because from a performance perspective there has been those issues that had been raised. So we come here and we're saying there are problems. It's not like we can hide those problems. Fact of the matter is that there is no grid in those areas. It's going to take some time before the grid reaches those areas. So the question then becomes, what do you do in the meantime? And we take the point. We are guilty as a department of perhaps not going back and revisiting some of those installations that have been done in the past from and change. That's the message that we will go back and go and correct that I think that's the commitment that we can make. We will go back and ensure that where those problems have been identified, be it with the refrigeration, be it with the, you know, the concession, be it with the other, you know, issues that we might not have been aware of, because, you know, our perspective, rightfully or wrongfully, was that we have done the installation, it is somebody else's problem, the maintenance aspects, and we've moved on. That's the way we look at it. And if it's a problem, we're guilty, we'll go and fix that. It's not for us to defend it.
Okay. No, it's fine. Well, the teacher is here. You're committing her. It's fine if you're saying that there will be a real look at the whole thing. Because, you know, for us, really, is the people who are suffering are the poor people. We really don't have a, what you call a say. They think that now these things, government put these things so they are fine, they don't work. What can we do, you know? They throw their hands that, well, what can we do? These things don't work. But if these things happen at clinics, at service delivery points, you know, clinics, schools, clearly there's a problem. But it's clear that Dr. Pleasure said, now let's look at what you call it, wait for the MTVPS. It will come, perhaps it will shed some light as to how do we move forward. But clearly, the question that we need to address, for instance, CFO, you spoke, Mr. Mafuku, ne? You spoke about the 2.7 billion that was given to schools, to education, to provinces, 2008, so on. I can tell you, I'm sure Ms. Fano can be my witness, that once you give money to, and we're talking to National Treasury, that, you see, that money, the budgeting of that money, they didn't prioritize the infrastructure, because they've got other, what we call, backlogs that they have, they want to fix. Because if it is an equitable share, well, the provinces decide what they want to do. Some provinces, the allocation, I mean the budgeting of that for 2.7 billion was not the same. Each province did what it wants with the province. And we're insisting to National Treasury that that money must be ring-fenced. But Northern Cape, I mean Western Cape, Eastern Cape, not, I'm sorry, Eastern Cape says, despite the fact that this is grant funding, it's ring-fenced. I mean, they take other decisions upon that, and I can't understand, you know? I can't understand that. Why then do we have the, what you call, why do we have grants? There should not be grants. People should just do as they like. You give them money, you say you do as you like. Because if you ring-fence them, you know, the Constitution says, Section 216, Treasury Control. National legislation must be established a national treasury and prescribe measures to ensure both transparency and expenditure control in each sphere of government by introducing A, generally recognized accounting practice, B, uniform expenditure classifications, and C, uniform treasury norms and standards. 2 says national treasury must enforce compliance with measures established in terms of subsection 1. National treasury must enforce compliance with the measures established in terms of subsection 1 and may stop the transfer of funds to an organ of state if that organ of state commits a serious or persistent material breach of those measures. Now, national treasury people, the province will give them a grant. They do what they want with the grant. I don't know how would you interpret that? How do you interpret that? You've given them the money. This money is meant for this. It's ring-fenced for a specific, what they call, objective. But the province does what it wants to do with the grant. Does it make sense for Parliament to pass a budget and say this budget is for this and that one is for this? To me, it doesn't make sense. If we allow people to do as they please, it doesn't make sense. We should just take our bags and go and say, well, So, I mean, we couldn't do anything about it. So that you go and tell the people there who put this parliament here that now, we can't do the work that you asked us to do. So that they must find other people. Is it correct that, for instance, a province like Eastern Cape, we understand the issue of austerity measures to ensure the savings, but not to deviate from that. There's no application to National Treasury for a permission to deviate. People decide. If you look at, for instance, the Public Finance Management Act, this functions by the way, Chapter 2, National Treasury and Revenue Funds, Section 6, Functions and Powers. And these functions and powers, sometimes they alternate between National Treasury and Provincial Treasury. Says National Treasury, 6.1 says National Treasury must A, promote national government's fiscal framework and coordination of macroeconomic policy. That is not what I want to get at. What are the clause that I want to get is, it is 2, ne? Oh, no, it's fine. Let's go down to 1F. National Treasury must monitor the implementation of provincial budgets. G, must promote and enforce transparent and effective management in respect of revenue, expenditure, assets and liabilities of departments, public entities, and constitutional accounts. Now, we have a constitution. We have the Public Finance Management Act. We're not complying with them. Well, the issue really that we are about to, that we're saying to Department of Education, I think that what the Department of Energy and I suspect and other departments are saying, education and health are the departments that must decide whether there's a need for those what you call a grant or not. And you haven't told us in your findings, you have told us, maybe not directly, that there are backlogs, and this is what you intend doing about the backlogs. But there are those small, what you call, soft issues that are important for the ordinary person, for the ordinary child, if the child is at school. You see, for those who stay in the urban areas, they know in the morning, the children, what you call, you find children are being passed out to schools that their parents think that they have better facilities. Because in spite of the government budgeting so that we can provide for these services, we're not doing it. So now we have this responsibility that the children there must go to, at the school, it's natural that you get thirsty, you must have water, there must be electricity and what, but you're not saying that what is it that you're going to do about this. Can we just hear that part? What is it that is going to be done about this? The issue is electrification of those schools. But if you think that all the schools in the country are electrified, you may as well tell us. If you think that unfortunately health is not here, if you think that all the schools, the issues of sanitation is there in the schools, so there's no longer a need to do this for the grant. But if you're not giving, you're not giving it as a grant, how is it being done? For instance, human settlement, I agree. They say that there are budgets for, there are budgets for provinces to do certain things. But clearly, there's infrastructure grants. There are so many of these grants, And the other issue that Mr. Frey, you can respond to. You know, I saw people shaking their heads, nodding, but they say that they want to help to work with the Department of Education. But officials from the Department of Education, they don't make themselves available in the province. Now, people don't know what to do. You have not responded to that. I thought that in your input you would respond to that, that what is it they do? Do you think that they must go from school to school and look for this service where the services are required, or there are people who are hired in the department who know exactly what is required where? Because that's what they told us. And if the department is not cooperating, because that's what they were saying, that the Department of Provincial Department of Education in the Eastern Cape is not cooperating with other departments who want to provide services. Now, what do they do? What should they do? Just tell us.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think through the social needs cluster, we do try to work together, you know, as departments. I think there's no way it would be very foolish of the department to ignore any additional resources and inputs to enhance. As you have correctly said, Chair, it is about the child. It is about, and we keep on saying, you know, amongst us as managers, you know, we are there because they are children. And it's something that we keep on reminding ourselves. So through the social needs cluster, you know, we do interact intensively, maybe not enough in order to stretch whatever funds. This is why the department has even now, we've got this education trust, you know, where we in the past generated something like 24 million, you know, to stretch the department's funds in order to get and address the backlogs. But we've again sensitized us, Chair. We will continue to work with that.
Sorry, Mr. Frey. For now, we really don't want you to spend budget 24 million. All we're saying, the departments that are sitting here, they're saying, Department of Education is not coming to the task. Just to make their people available to coordinate these services.
Yes.
You know, that's what we get from in the Eastern Cape. In fact, it was not untrue, because the Department of Education also snapped us. It didn't come to our meeting there.
I'm sorry for that, Chair. I'm leaving this meeting with this resolve that we will deal with this matter, Chair, that we will cooperate, that we'll give our full support in terms of from the department side. We will make this a priority, Honorable Chair.
Sure. DJ, I want to conclude. What do you want to say, DJ? As a concluding remark?
No, thank you, Chairperson. I think I also would want to apologize that we were unable also to be with you during the oversight. I think we sent an inappropriate person. We sent a person from the petroleum side. But I think what we're going to do now is that we're going to go back to, not just in the Eastern Cape, we're going to go back to all
sure.
the distributions.
Yeah, yeah.
And then just assess their maintenance levels and we'll be happy to come back and report before the end of this year on our assessment of what is it that we thought we found out and what is it that we're going to do to correct.
Teaching, we're very generous. We don't want you to come back tomorrow and tell us what your assessment. We meet you at the budget. When you have assessed and put your money where your mouth is, that this is how you think that you're going to go forward about this. Mr. Cook.
Okay, Chair, I've got three issues to address. The first one.
Sorry, Mr. Topkoff, I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry, sir.
Mm.
Oh.
No, it's you, I'm sorry. I just gave you a.
Not a problem, sir. The first one is in respect of time frames. I guess we should be able to do that in the next 2 weeks. We'll have just to talk to the Department of Energy. And then now together, then now we agree on the time frames in respect of all the projects that then I will mention in the presentation, as to when then now they will be given the point of supply as well as a service connection. We will provide that. There's the issue of the tariff. My understanding, because I drove the process check, is that all schools and clinics are using what we call the home light tariff. The home light tariff is a tariff that's being used by individual households. What I suspect could be the reason now is because as from the beginning of this year, there has been then now a different modeling of the tariffs by the National Electricity Regulator of South Africa, National Energy Regulator of South Africa,
okay,
where now they have come with what is called block tariffs. The likelihood then now that that could possibly be the end result of that, that gives the people an impression that these are commercial tariffs. But this being a pricing issue, what we are going to do, I will get our pricing people. We will sit with the Department of Energy, give the department enough explanation and have them ask the questions.
Sure.
And then we will then now give a response to this committee in this regard. The last thing, Chair, is in respect of prepayment meters or in the Eastern Cape. I've been involved with electrification there from inception. And when we started there, we were putting in schools and clinics conventional metering, which are the meters where then now you bill the department and they pay at the end of the month. And it involved then now signing a supply agreement. Somewhere late in the 90s, around 1998, 1999, the Department of Education in the Eastern Cape, they gave us a directive that only Section 21 schools should be given a conventional meter, such that those schools that were not Section 21, who had conventional metering, we had to remove those meters and replace them with prepayment meters. The pain of prepayment meters changes follows.
Sorry. I just hope that Mr. Frey, Madam Tugada are listening to what you're sharing with us, but continue.
That's correct, Chair. The pain of prepayment metering is that, for instance, let me give you a clinical example of Msabo Mnyama Senior Secondary School. It's a comprehensive high school near Port St. John's, and there's a clinic next door. The clinic was on conventional metering. The school is a comprehensive high school. It's got a prepayment meter. My first question when I went there with APSA was, where do these people buy electricity? That is, where is the vending point? The vending point was 40 kilometers away. And we were saying, but you can't then now give them a prepayment meter because those people were staying in Port St. John's. And the vending meter, the vending point was in Libode, which means they've got to spend money. We engaged the education department at the time, and they were saying to us, they will make available tokens, that is, they will buy tokens in bulk, they will make tokens available in circuit offices. Chair, we still need to see that happening. But the point that we're trying to drive home is that it defeats the very ends of electrifying the schools. Because what happens is this. The school sits there without electricity because they cannot buy. And the next thing that happens is that the installation gets vandalized. And it becomes a safety risk.
Hmm.
So, what we are saying is that, then, for instance, if you look at Kumandeni Clinic, Kumandeni Clinic was electrified by the Department of Health. I don't understand how they put a 20 amp meter. I don't understand. And at the end of the day, they don't give the money to purchase electricity. We are going to upgrade that to a 60 amp. And I think what we will do in doing so, we will not just go to the school and put a CCM. We will engage the Department of Health to make sure, Chair, that then now at least the installation works. But it becomes a big problem to put prepayment meters in schools which are far away from vending points, in schools then now where there is no money for the school then now to be able to purchase electricity. As I rightfully said, then now it puts the very installation at risk.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Mr. Sokol. Mr. Treasury, you're fine.
Maybe just to respond to the issue about what is National Treasury doing with regard to monitoring the provincial performance. We monitor through both sections.
Treasury, National Treasury. I want you to tell me that in the next division of revenue, this grant will be there. Continue.
The issue is that we're doing quite a lot. We do have monitoring in place on performance, and we monitor provincial treasuries. And for example, we're in a recent Budget Council meeting where the Minister of Finance meets with the MECs of Finance, agreed that 10 letters will be written to the Premiers to actually point out the financial challenges in each and every province. And
quite a riot to report on that. Okay. Joking.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
And then the second issue is with regard to the issue of funding or comprehensively dealing with schools. Particularly in light of the fact of the challenges that existed with actually introducing multiple conditional grants that actually targeting the same thing. And that's why the proposal was made. Why don't, and particularly those grants were just put in place to deal with 2001 backlogs and prior to that. So you're actually creating murky waters, actually creating a new grant, or do you actually reintroduce those old grants? It's much better to actually look at the main funding stream that's going to provinces, the infrastructure grants to provinces, and actually seeing how can we actually improve the planning, as pointed out by ECK, and actually comprehensively deal not just with pre-2001 backlogs, but look at the overall mud issue, overall unsafe structures, and actually putting a comprehensive plan there. Otherwise, you get duplication in funding, lack of accountability by stakeholders, getting different stakeholders involved, where accountability links are not sure. Is it the Department of Energy that must take accountability, or is it the Provincial Department of Education that must take accountability? So if you actually do it through the main funding stream, and actually saying Department of Education in the province, you're responsible, nationally responsible for actually doing oversight and monitoring, ensuring that the schools on the list don't just come up one year and disappear again the next year. It's much better to actually have a comprehensive approach, and that's most probably what is more favourable than reintroducing the grant that originally actually had a lot of challenges.
You know what I want to share with you is just that I want to, now I would want to put the Money Bills Amendment to the Related Matters Act and really into force now, and deal with people who don't spend and come back and ask for all over. We must just approve, you know. I mean, the act now is there. So I have to say, hold on. We're not going to approve this one because we're not convinced why the funds were not spent. Government is not in the business of saving. So we're not a standard bank. Okay. Dr. Fletcher, are you fine? Mr. Chanyo, are you okay? Human settlement. Mampere, no?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I'm hearing what Wendy is saying, but I've gotten up to you that the 3-year intervention program from water and sanitation school did a wonderful job. It's like the presentation was done there. It was the work from the Department of Water Affairs and
who did a really work, which we can live on it, Wendy. Can we, again, maybe just as an intervention, we have serious problems on the of children not having sanitation and children not having school water. Can we have this intervention again? I don't say the department will be taking over the work of the provincial department. We did this work while the province were doing the work, which we cannot even show to people what they were doing those 3 years we've been with the program. Can you extend this program for at least another 3 years or not MTF so that we deal with the remaining challenges in rural areas, especially those schools in rural areas, really? When it's not going to help to say we need 1.3 and 1.1 as good as the reality, there are no services on the ground. And when there's no services, somebody has to account, a certain minister has to account why there's no water and why there's no sanitation in those schools. It's not going to say that there is a funding stream. That funding stream, it will take years before it materializes. I know I've been in government for too long. It's not going to happen. All these things we talk about, they're not going to happen tomorrow, the next MCF. Please. And the last thing to say, I would like to conclude with the issue of use of enzymes in fertilizing the toilet. They have been scientifically tested and presented the findings to the minister. The Water Research Commission has tested them, and the universities, especially the University of Nagar, under Professor Barra, they did the test and then presented the findings to the minister and also to the municipality, to the councillors. They discourage the use of those things are not working. They have serious implications, especially on the groundwater. We have to come up with different technologies which are maintainable in areas where we have to lose the eye price on sanitation. Because if you put those tablets, the whole thing comes to water. What happens is it sinks, and then the water in the water table, some areas are very high, and then down the stream kids get so they were really discouraged, and there are too much commercialized sources. People who advertise them, they are just making money out of it. It's really not working. The minister was told, the then minister of water affairs was told, please, they must be stopped really, because it's not working. It's not, they're not doing what those packets, the small packets or tablets are said to be doing.
Thank you. Now, I think that ours is not really to promote this product over the other. We think that the departments have sufficient, what we call, expertise to know what is it that can be done or not be done. We would not, what we call, want to prescribe that on any way. But ladies and gentlemen, at this stage, for me, for us, this side, we just pay to talk here. I wish we could continue talking, but there are other commitments. And we're closing this meeting at this note, where Ms. Mpotlo is making appeal that let this go back. You know that beginning of the year we raised this matter. We did promise that we will investigate it. We have done that. Now what we want, we think that unless we convince otherwise, that there is still a need out there to deal with this thing. I mean, there's still a need out there to ensure that these services can be extended to schools, especially the poor schools, because it is those schools that really don't have what we call water, that don't have electricity. We haven't yet, in fact, this meeting is not about the fact that there is droughts now. There are tanks at schools, empty tanks that are sitting there in many schools. Not about that, but the issue is about these grants that were there. When we go to the next Division of Revenue, we would want to engage on this matter. I'm sure by that time we'll be able to get a response. whether it's from the MPDPS time, say what is it that needs to be done. The Department of Education of Eastern Cape and Provincial Treasurer, we are really requesting, we have appealed to the Department of Education to ensure that it cooperates with other people. You know, people there, they want to work. Mr. Violi was there, Amanda, what is Amanda's name? Ashima. Yeah, you know, he's a hard worker. But the Department of Education is not responding positively, you know. Now, unless then in the Department of Education you set up a structure, whether it's your social, what you call it?
Social.
The one that ensures that people across departments do what you call a seat, and there's a response from the Department of Education. Mm-hmm. And by the way, Mr. Frey, I mean, it's an open secret that the Western Cape, Eastern Cape has got more debt law, you know. Mm-hmm. So please, respond positively to what the other departments want to, are coming, what services that they are coming up with. But they're not going to be able to do anything if the department is not coming to the party. They depend on the Department of Education also coming to the party. If not, then it means that there's nothing that they can do. But, well, on this note, we will invite you. Across. Ah, well, I hear that. except for Mr. Apane, who is not invited, everyone else is everyone else is invited to. Is that here, no? Yeah, I'm told that across here there's a place for a small lunch. So, this meeting. Stand at chance. Thank you very much for coming. Mr. Frey, I haven't seen you for
The problem on the
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And I keep everything to our committee.
Thank you.